This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Hey, what is up, everybody? My name is Garnet Lee. Great to be here for Weekend Confirmed with the two Jeffs.
Old School Power Trio.
Yeah.
Old School Power Trio.
Oh, yeah.
So that's Jeff Cannata there, my partner in crime.
With two N's and one T.
Which means you need to be playing Payday. Then you
I
truly
be.
Yeah.
Jeff tried to organize that to his credit. Matt has tried to organize that, and I was not available.
I know. No, it's all good. I know people are busy. We'll get to it eventually, I'm sure.
And indie Jeff Matt is there at the end of the table.
Howdy, howdy.
Good to have you guys here. We have a ton to cover today. Obviously, this week, the word for the week was not press sneak, but but multiplayer, as we have both Call of Duty Ghosts and Grand Theft Auto 5 multiplayer infos.
Yeah.
Lots to talk about there. Revealies. We will definitely talk about some Payday 2.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry I didn't join you, but I did play last night.
Dude, I was playing at like really weird hours.
You were playing with international viewers.
I was, yes.
Excellent.
I actually had a really awesome match. I was telling Jeff earlier, I was like the UN of crime. It was like me, some Russian dude, some guy from Spain, and some French dude.
So I can only tell
Jeff
from...
Jeff likes to play games and work on his dialects at the same time.
That's right, yes.
We will do Payday 2 first, because I want to come back to it really quickly, because I can tell this is going to be one of those games that is a story generator.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it's all about stories.
And they're going to be adding to it for a while.
Jeff has no stories to tell because he's still playing WoW.
I have a story to tell. You know what I did earlier today?
WoW.
Well, yes, but right before I came here, I went to...
You crafted something.
Well, yes, but I but between that and getting here, I went to an audition for a...
awesome.
Well, yeah.
Wait for it.
All right. For a commercial for the Wii U.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I'm probably very much not allowed to talk about it, but sure. I'm going to talk about it a little. Right. And I auditioned for like dad of the family that's playing the Wii U game. And like, I literally was doing all the stuff that everybody's been getting on me about saying literally. I got to say literally less often. Anyway,
Andrew's not here because you saw the whole dictionary argument over literally this last week.
Well, it got changed. And living language sucks. I know. I already went through it with the celibate. Anyway.
For those wondering, apparently literally no longer means literally. You can also use literally right. figuratively to mean, I don't know, I'm confused. Anyway.
Living language screws us.
So you were saying you're playing the dad.
And doing all the stuff that we all make fun of in those commercials where you have to be ridiculously overexcited to be using the motion control.
Wait, so how does that work with a tablet per se?
Well,
you're not waving it around.
Again,
right?
I probably shouldn't be talking about any of this. There is no tablet to be found in the commercial. It's all Wiimotes.
Oh, because that's
interesting.
Yeah, I didn't book it, and I probably won't book it, but how hilarious would it be if I was in a Wii
U
commercial?
I think it would be awesome.
Yeah, it would be awesome.
It would be more great YouTube fodder for Dad Cannata.
Yeah.
Dad Cannata has got some great representation.
I do. I have a few dad roles. I tend to have children in commercials that are only like 10 years younger than me. It's ridiculous.
Well, hey, you know, it's America.
Yeah.
You're going to make a great dad.
Oh, thank you, sir. Someday, far from now. Anybody out there who is thinking of you know, trying to come to Los Angeles and be an actor, I also had an audition this week for, like people care about this in this podcast, but I'm going to talk about it anyway. I also had an audition this week for The Mentalist.
Oh, and, awesome.
Yeah. Nice. So my role that I went out for, super excited. It was three words, not three lines, three words.
Three words.
Yeah. Were they separate lines?
No. One line. Consisting of three words.
All right.
When I got to the audition, there were 15 names ahead of mine for the same part. That's the reality of like,
yeah,
any one of us could easily have done it. You didn't need to call in 15 people. And I have no idea how many people after me were called.
Yeah, that was
before
just
I got there.
That was the pre-lunch crowd, right?
Yeah. And we were the lucky ones. We were the ones that actually got called in. So, you know, it's a hard business.
You know, the one, as long as we're down this rabbit hole for just a moment, the one that slayed me, and I don't remember whether you told this story on the air or like at sushi afterwards, but it was when you were doing, was it Burger King? And you had to eat all the hamburgers.
And it had like, it wasn't Burger King. I think it was Jack in the Box. Yeah, you had to spit them into a bucket.
I was like, oh my God, that's just.
Because if you're there for 12 hours
like and doing hamburger
thing,
you right.
can't possibly, even if they're delicious the first couple of times, by the last couple of times, you want to kill yourself.
Oh my God, I'm having meaning of life flashbacks where you're like, oh, would you like some more, sir? Oh no, I can't eat another bite.
Right.
Okay. Wafer thin chocolate mint.
Anyway.
Fuck off.
Oh, yes, Mr. Creosote.
Yes.
An excellent, excellent skit.
So video games is a much more fun topic.
Video games, much more fun topic. We've got all of that. I kind of, especially since Jeff is here and you played this as well, I kind of want to talk about Witcher 2 now that I'm really into it and sucked into it.
But Jeffs are big fans of that game.
Like,
that is true.
I think a conversation that would be cool to have would talk about, this mysterious, hard to qualify conversation of getting engaged with a game, because I found The Witcher 2 really hard, a really slow burn getting into it. But now that I'm into it, it's really great. And mm-hmm. I think this is like an interesting conversation to talk about in the context of a variety of different games and how quickly they pull people in and how long do you give a game to even get your attention. You know, a lot of times people do, you know, fall off from games pretty quickly. So we got that. I think that's plenty of teases. We got plenty more coming up. Jeff's got a friend's band even for the music today. The little dubsteppy wub-wub coming up.
Wub-wub-wub-wub.
So, Payday 2.
Yes.
I have to tell you, I'll kick this thing off. I didn't know what to expect because I hadn't been following it that closely. Andrew got me hype on it like 2 or 3 weeks ago from talking about the branching path thing. And so I installed it yesterday. I was like, okay, I got to get in a little time at least before the show starts. And then I hadn't realized that was Starbreeze also. So you had Brothers Starbreeze. And then you also had Payday 2 Starbreeze. By the way, Jeff, I'm disappointed you have not played Brothers.
I am too. Don't blame me. Blame WoW.
I'm okay.
All it's right. not my fault. It's WoW's
Step
fault.
One.
Admit your problem. And, well, I'm not going to do that.
But
I'm on step zero.
Play Brothers. It's really, really awesome.
Yeah. Okay, I played it at E3 and I really thought it was cool. Yeah.
There you go. So parking that for a minute. Coming out of Payday. So it's Starbreeze. And, you know, I think that this is a tough thing about any game you go into where you have a developer who you have sort of a mind's eye picture of what you expect from them.
Right,
and
sure.
With Starbreeze, I go in thinking, oh, it's going to be gorgeous. And even on PC, my initial impression was, wow, visually this looks a little out of date and then inconsistent.
Yeah.
And, you know, and by inconsistent, I mean that, you know, you're inside this safe house and things are reasonably, you know, well laid out, but it's really sparse on furniture. And then you like come up to a telephone and it looks like something from a 4 or 5 years ago game.
I just wish, I mean, when I had the same impression playing visually as you did, and I just wish that games like that would get the budget that,
oh man,
you know, a Call of Duty does or something.
But you know, Starbreeze has done great without having huge budgets before,
right?
But I would say that Jeff Kanata, this game, and I say that because I think a lot of people may flip it on or may look at a video or something and have that response. This is another one of those way more fun than it is good games.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And like, you should just overlook that entirely because the graphics are serviceable enough to get you to doing the game, which is really, really fun. It's way more fun than it has.
I just want to do the game.
I just want to do the game.
Let me do the game. Go ahead. Do it.
I just want to do the game. And the game really, you know, it's funny. It's like it's gone cycles now for me. Originally, Payday 1 was pitched as Left 4 Dead, more or less.
Sure.
Cooperative, you know, multiplayer game where you're a a team of gangsters and you pull off heists and you do jobs. You know, you're going to make some money. And then the pitch on Payday 2, it changes like, oh, it's no longer just like that. But I have to tell you, it is that. It is that, but with a different layer of how they approach it. So in Left 4 Dead 2, obviously, very sophisticated game director changing things. Here, it's not about changing things in that sort of dynamic way. It's about having different things that happen and it makes each one of the heists. So the heists are a little more regimented, but because they have these nodes of potential change, there's a lot of
including level geometry. I mean, they the layout of the
there's
bank where the vault is going to be in a different place. Won't be in the same place necessarily.
So it's cool because you cameras, have a familiarity, but you don't have a familiarity. Whereas Left 4 Dead is a little more fluid in that the you don't know what the AI director is going to throw at you.
Well,
does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, when you look at the concept behind each of those games, Left 4 Dead is a oh crap. The shit is hitting the fan. Let's get ourselves out of this situation. And you would think that a heist game is more we're going in with a plan kind of a situation. And you're saying that that plan has to be flexible as a player.
Right.
Does that how does that work with the sort of the fiction of the game?
Well, I wish I had had a plan, because the one thing I have to say about this game is it does not do a good job of telling the player how to play the game.
No, that is true. A lot of it is sort of experimental. You see a lot of people trying to play this like a first-person shooter in the first few days, like just straight up, I'm going to go in and pull out my gun.
That's what I was doing. I'm going to hand this off to you in a second, and I'm going to hand it off to you on this point, which is that the game brings you in, and you get this very brief, here's your safe room. You get to wander around your safe room, and it shows you the core mechanic of picking a lock and putting a drill on a safe. And you can fire a couple of guns, and then it just sort of turns you loose, and you don't really know what to do. And so if you go to their I guess, scenario entry point where you would get missions, it's called CrimeNet. And there's either CrimeNet, which is the offline, or CrimeNet online.
Right.
And I didn't really know what the next job I was supposed to take was, so I did CrimeNet offline. Because I wanted to figure out what to do. And I played the first mission, and I sort of got the hang of it. And they were like, okay, I'm going to go online. I go online. And one thing was killing me. It's like, why do people always talk about stealth in this? Because every time I go to play this game, I just go in guns blazing. Okay, so here's a tip if you play Payday. There's a giant icon in the center of the screen that says left bumper to put on mask. And it's right there at the beginning of the mission. And until you put on your mask, it's right there staring in your face. And if you've ever played games before, typically when something's in your face like that, it's meaning, hey, player, do this.
Right.
Well, it doesn't mean, hey, player, do this in this game. What it means is when you're ready to put aside trying to be, you know, stealthy or subtle about the way you want to approach things, and you just want to put your mask on and fuck shit up, put the mask on. Because as soon as you put the mask on, now you're a criminal with your gun out.
You have to put the mask on before you can do anything that's suspicious. So I don't even think you can crouch until you put the mask on. Basically,
it was completely confusing to me.
The sort of case the joint setup that some of these – now there are missions that don't have that where you just start out, you're going to go in and fuck shit up. But these heist missions, the bank specifically – You're supposed to case it. You're supposed to like get there. Everybody kind of walks around the outside. Where are the cameras? Are there any cameras outside? Are any patrolling guards there? And then you get your people set up around. You can have a ghost like the character that I'm playing. There's an RPG element. So there's four classes and you basically level up your character with all these different abilities. But my ghost character can walk into the front of a bank and he wears no armor. He's got a suit on and I'm not suspicious to anybody in there. Like I can get pretty close to the guards and stuff without alerting them and stuff. And so I can go inside and look around and go, okay, there's a bunch of people in here. There's no guards in the lobby. We got a manager that's patrolling in the back area. There's this, there's a safe back there. You can see through windows and stuff. And then you basically, once you're ready to go, you get everybody in their spot. And if you want to do it stealthily, some of it's dependent on the layout.
How I got acquainted with this was doing the bank mission, or like a third or fourth mission, and was greeted with through my speakers, "What the fuck with the asshole who put on his mask?"
Oh,
I was like,
"Yeah, oh. You're like, yeah, where? Oh, it's me."
Yeah,
right. I was like, "Oh,
yeah." There is definitely none of this stuff does the game tell you. Like, it's not like, hey, it'll give you hints about the ghost being more stealthy, and every little piece of armor that you wear or gun that you carry will increase or decrease your visibility.
It's like this visibility
weight,
meter, right?
And like you have carry weight, so like if you're wearing heavier armor and carrying a money bag, you're going to move slow as hell. Whereas like the reason I chose the ghost is because he doesn't wear armor. I can throw a money bag on just like haul ass.
But so he doesn't wear armor.
But he doesn't wear armor. So once things go sideways, it's like, you're in a little bit more trouble. I mean, but he's got a gadget called the ECM jammer. So you getting ready to go into a building, you put that up on a wall and it jams all the cameras and radio communications for like 30 seconds. So if you're gonna, go loud or take, get a couple guards down and take care of knock out a few civilians and you don't want to alert the people on the street.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you basically
So Jeff, the reason you want to do this is because what happens is once you, quote, go loud, the police response starts escalating. Mm-hmm. And so initially you'll get like plainclothesmen, and then you'll get like a plainclothesman tack team, and then you'll get like a SWAT team, and then you get like a serious SWAT team. Right. And then you start getting like some
Air National Guard.
Snipers start appearing
crazy,
on the buildings,
yeah,
across the
military,
way.
You know, paramilitary types, and, yeah, and it just escalates and escalates and escalates.
Until Transformers come.
Well, actually, at one point I was in, so actually, here's what hooked me on this game after I was being frustrated is the last game I played last night was this there was this mission where you go to a shopping mall, mm-hmm, and the basic idea is go to the shopping mall, fuck shit up. I mean, that is literally the idea. It's go to the shopping mall.
Destroy $50,000 worth of stuff.
And destroy $50,000 worth of junk. Now, the other thing is that while you're out doing this, you want to also, you know, rob as much as you can because you're trying to increase your cash take. So, fortunately, this was after I had learned about walking in with our masks off. So, okay, all four of us walk in with our masks off. We case the place. We wind up upstairs. There's like a jewelry shop. There's like a fancy car place. Then downstairs from that, there's this exotic like shoe store for like women. We're like, okay, these are gonna be good places to hit, like jewelry.
Find
the
Pear store, the Apple Store knockoff.
No,
it's like a Pear.
Oh yeah,
they have all these little laptops.
Oh no, I saw that in the first one, but I don't think I saw it in the mall because, okay, we never got back down to the first floor.
Oh, okay,
because what happened was we were working on the jewelry place and the shoe store and some other store, all of which had vaults, all of which we had to put drills on. So we're like running back and forth protecting them. And it starts escalating and escalating and escalating and escalating. And we wind up the vault in the shoe store, in the jewelry store, which was upstairs at a like corner of the mall, was the one that took us the most time to get. But it was worth it. The payoff was, you know, two big money bags full of money that our team was going to carry out. The only problem is by the time we're trying to get them out of there, it is full-scale army assault on us.
The risk-reward thing in this game is great because it is very much about like, okay, guys, we should probably go now because the next assault's about to start.
Yeah.
And we're going to – dude, come on. Like, let go of that safe deposit box. We don't have time to like pick that lock.
That's
like, just
so cool,
come
man.
On. Let's go.
So
let's
that's
go.
Like in the movie. When
we're pinned up in this corner, and finally we break out of the pinned up corner. But as we're just about to hit out into like the center alley of the you know, the center walkway of the mall, big time assault comes from both ends. So we retreat, and instead of retreating back into the jewelry store, we retreat down the little side corridor. You know how malls have like little small corridors. And at the end of this one, there's one of those typical sort of like information kiosk things. And so we sort of hole up inside there and use it as cover, and they just come at us full force. I mean, it is batshit insane for about 10 minutes. We're just like holding off wave after wave. I mean,
smoke grenades and like all sorts of stuff.
Oh, yeah. They're throwing smoke grenades and coming through the smoke, and they get progressively more and more badass. And you can revive your friends. So when they fall, you're able to come over to them, and there's a slow circle timer that fills up. You're able to revive them. And at one point, like walking out of the smoke, comes this dude who is in he's not even body armor anymore. He looks like a member of the bomb squad. Like, what was the movie in Afghanistan?
Hurt Locker.
Hurt Locker. Oh, yeah, Hurt Locker. He looks like the dude out of Hurt Locker, and he comes wading out of the smoke, and I'm like, oh shit, this is not gonna go well. And we like pour, we finally get him taken down, and there was like a momentary lull, and one of the guys was like, hit it. And we just ran out, and from here it went really crazy. So we like come streaking out into the middle of the come running down both sides of the hallway into the main hallway of the mall. There's still dudes pouring in everywhere. Yeah. There's like dudes downstairs, and we have like this crazy movie action scene of running through the last section of the mall to get to where the stairway is to get to the helicopter, like shooting up everything, knocking out the police who are chasing us, like knocking down the dudes who are in front of us at the last second, getting to the helicopter and getting away.
When it's firing, it feels like heat. Like you're in the middle of some crazy like heist that's gone wrong and major weapons.
This was so gone wrong.
I mean, does, and hearing you talk about it does make me feel like reminisce about Left 4 Dead. Of like, and then the big guy came and we had to run for the helicopter.
But and the difference was it was so cool because we were holed up for so long, mm-hmm, and then we somehow or other managed to weather wave after wave and have like this very little window and then make a rush for it and get back to where we could get escape.
Well, now and the cool thing is, and I don't know if you've played enough, but there you eventually, as you level up, you unlock different missions. And, yes. And you get to the point where you're doing multi-day missions. Hmm. So
well, I haven't gotten to that.
Yeah. So each, you know, some of them are 2 days, some are three. There are some, a couple of 5 day missions, and they're, each mission is a separate objective and level. And, you know, they daisy chain one into the other.
So that's more like what Andrew was talking about, where you actually, like, he went to like an art museum and stole a piece of art, but then had to go to a meetup to.
There's that. The art heist is awesome because you're like casing the museum and like trying to get the paintings that are marked before you, before the guards get alerted. And then you take those to a, like a train yard drop off area. And will the people that you're doing business with fuck you over? Will the FBI show up? Will the drop go completely smoothly? You don't know until you're like actually
this
there.
You guys are making this sound extremely fun. Is it as fun as you're making it sound?
It is extremely fun and insanely fun when you're playing with people that you're actually communicating with.
Right.
Or, you know, I've played with randoms that do a really good job of playing. But yeah, it definitely, if you're willing to communicate with each other, and even if you're just typing to each other in key moments saying, hey, the drill's got 2 minutes left, you know, go ahead and keep, you know, your positions or whatever. It is very, when it's firing on all cylinders, it's probably the most fun I've had since a game like Left 4 Dead in a fast paced co-op.
Dude, it's got the vibe.
And it's also got, it's like, harkens back to, I want another SWAT game now because of this, too. but that's just, because, you know, you're like, get down on the ground, and you're doing all this, you know.
Well, how awesome would this game be if people could play the other side?
Oh, I know, yeah.
Like, this game would be even more awesome if people could drop in and be on the attack, lead the attack assaults against you, right?
Like some sort of cops and robbers. I mean, the way that they scale up the assault on you as you're I think things that you do in game will actually contribute to that. So if you kill a you lose money for killing civilians, but I think that also escalates the police presence. You know, if you can get through half the mission before a civilian walking by on the street actually looks into the bank and sees that, you know, things are going crazy, the alarm won't go off and you'll actually have a real head start on drilling the bank.
So you can, once you put on the mask, you can come up to people like in the bank and use a intimidation on them.
Right. Right. And it's like, yeah, you tell them to get down. If it's a guard that you have the drop on, you can actually tell them to get down, cuff yourself, and they'll just stand there. And then there's also, this is something I didn't figure out until the other day. There's a hostage negotiation mechanic.
What?
So you go into a bank, you tie up a bunch. I mean, I think you start out with, you know, the ability to carry 2 zip ties. So if everybody gets civilians on the ground, ties them up, when things start going crazy, and I mean, the cops will actually come in and start trying to rescue civilians. But if somebody dies, they get quote unquote captured by the police.
Right.
If you have hostages available, Bane, who's the guy that's running the mission, will start negotiating with the police. And then he'll basically say, all right, go release, you know, one of the marked hostages, and then you can bring your dude back into play faster than you would if you just had to wait for him to cool down. So it's like there's all these little teeny things in there that are really like, I wish they'd done a little bit better job of explaining them, but they, for the most part, work really, really well and just add more little layers of.
Yeah. I have a couple of questions because you played it more. Yeah. So all of the missions are set up for 4 players.
Yeah.
There are 4 character classes.
Correct.
When you go into a mission, do you play the character class you've selected and there can be multiple versions of that, or do they automatically assign one of each of the 4?
Well, they automatically assign one of each of the 4 characters, but they're not tied to specific builds.
So if I'm an overlord, if that's what I've been working on, every time I join a game, I'll be an overlord. If that's what I've selected, how do I know which one I'm joining as?
Oh, well, it's based on your character specs. So there's a character skill tree. So
right.
every mission you can.
But there's 4 skill trees.
There's 4 skill trees. You can, you know, dive into any one of them. But if you specialize in one tree,
it'll pair you with people that aren't like you.
Well, no. You're basically, okay, so every time you.
I'm not necessarily a ghost. I can pick and match off any of those 4 trees.
Yeah, like if I'm looking at the mission briefing as a ghost and they're like, okay, we're going to go in there and tear shit up and there's going to be tons of, you know, police coverage and whatever, I know it's not going to be a stealth mission, I'll throw the heavy armor on and I'll pull a better gun out of my inventory. Okay. And I won't use the ECM jammer. I'll bring a health pack.
See, I was thinking about it in traditional sense of like, you were like, if you were playing a, if, I was thinking about it as you are the ghost character and you only get that tree. And then as you go in as an overlord, you're like, you are the overlord and you get that tree.
Not at all.
But it's not like you can multi-class.
In fact, they make it really easy to respec your character on the fly. So if you're going to play with a bunch of people and they're all specced out and you're like, well, we don't really need 2 ghosts. You can hit a button. It'll pull all your points out of the ghost tree and you can reallocate those. And I think there's a slight financial penalty because everything that you do, whether you unlock a game or or I'm sorry, unlock a gun or a mask or whatever it is after a mission, you still have to buy that with cash that you earn in missions.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So, which is another thing. It encourages you not to play with people that are like not playing tactically the way that you want or not playing as careful as you want, because if you fail a mission, you don't get – I mean the experience gain that you get is like zilch and the cash that you get is like zero.
You get no bank, man.
So it's like you really want to make sure that – if shit goes crazy, just make sure you get to the van at the end when the escape van shows up because – you want to get paid.
It sounds so awesome. I'm so interested to hear what you guys think of the GTA multiplayer announcement in relationship to this, because do you think it's going to be as, I don't know,
this is definitely
realistic?
This is way more focused, I think.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, that's the beauty of this. It sounds like a targeted experience. Yeah. It's built around these missions. It's a purpose built game to foster this. Like, look, it's really simple stuff, but the drill for breaking into safes takes a really long time to work, and it breaks down multiple times that someone has to physically go back to the drill and hold down the button to reset the drill.
Dude, I saw Die Hard.
And if you're an enforcer or a technician really high level, I think I leveled up three times with this one random that I was playing with, because he was playing an enforcer, and eventually you can unlock a saw. So
I've seen the icon, but I didn't know you got it.
Yeah, you unlock it. It's a really high tiered thing. And you basically, when you go into a bank vault without a saw, and you're trying to go to the safety deposit boxes and stuff, and you're like, all right, hold down F to pick the lock, and it's like, it probably takes you about 30 seconds, 45 seconds to pick a lock. If you have the saw, you're just like, or you go up to an ATM and you're like, meh. And
you can cut open the ATMs?
Yeah. In fact, one of the missions that we did, we just started. He ran up to the ATM in front of the store, sawed the door off. Let's go, guys. We got all the cash. We just got back in the van, and it was like, okay, there's a big payout, and I just leveled up for doing absolutely nothing. So I won't say that there aren't balancing issues with – you could end up playing with a person that has got gear that makes the mission significantly easier for them, but – that's kind of cool, like running into that guy that's like all decked out and everything. Like, I'm looking forward to the ability to be able to bag corpses and like put those away. Because, you can take guys out now, but you can't like actually.
I want to hold the GTA 5 multiplayer discussion for another side, so we have a little more time to talk about it. One thing, though, that did pop up, and I'm not trying to generate a false conversation here, though. Someone just questioned me about this. They said, hey, how come you guys were so worried about the potential offensive nature of Dragon's Crown's sexuality, but can be like all over this like crazy violence and societal maelstrom of Payday 2.
Not an invalid point.
No, it's not.
And not just Payday 2.
Although I do have a valid reason for that.
Yes.
It's because the quote unquote questionable material in Payday 2 is part and parcel to the experience. The questionable material in Dragon's Crown is artistic, but not – it has nothing
to
do –
the power for her spells come from those boobs.
Well, okay. I stand corrected. But you know what I mean? Like, it's not – it's an artistic choice. It doesn't it doesn't enhance the gameplay per se, whereas if you're making a game about robbing banks, it's going
to
be violent.
It has to be a game about robbing. Yeah. It's like a Jason Statham flick.
Yeah.
Of course it's filled with that sort of violence and those things, because that is what it is.
Right.
It's,
Now, as an adult, I'm personally not offended by either of these things, but
it's like you go to Crank. I've used Crank before, but you go to Crank and you know what to expect.
Yes.
You shouldn't say I've used Crank before.
although you can. Did you play the episode or the
mission? Well, I said that because people like laughed, because last time I tried to reference Crank, I actually referenced Drive, which was completely wrong.
There's a Payday 2 mission where you cook meth. Like, you're actually – there's a meth lab upstairs. You have to, like, find the chemicals in the house.
What?
And then the guy over the radio tells you in a random order. Like, he goes, okay, add the hydrochloric whatever the fuck it is. And you're like, okay. And he's like, oh, no, wait, add this. And so you add the ingredients in the order that he tells you. If you add the wrong ingredient, the second floor blows up.
It explodes up. Oh, man.
Yeah.
It's funny.
So, yes. I mean, look, Payday 2 is an absolute blast. Not that it doesn't have its warts. It has, another thing that sort of stood out to me that now years later, I guess, I'm starting to get up with is Starbreeze's first-person shooters, this sense of locomotion, the way you move, doesn't feel like a person walking. It just sort of feels like a camera moving through an environment.
Well, and if you
not
look
a big deal.
Yeah, you look at the animations and they're a little stiff too.
But man, it's like, don't be the way we started off, don't judge this game just on its first impression and on those technical elements, because this is one of those games if you get in and play it with some folks, you'll have a really good time.
Yeah, you want to play Cops and Robbers as a kid, this is sort of
totally
that.
It is like, the imaginary.
Well, the robbers at least.
Fantasize about being Hans Gruber, I guess.
Right, right. Yeah. Or Wayne Grow, or like any of these, you know, like crazy.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. All right, we'll take a little break. When we come back on the other side, we will hit you with, I don't know, some surprising news. Surprising news coming up on Weekend Confirmed. Whoa. When we continue. This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get up-to-the-minute gaming news along with thousands of HD videos and screenshots. Get into the action by creating your own profile, post updates about what you're playing, and stay connected with friends and other gamers. Tired of standing in lines? Find great deals on new and used games, pre-order upcoming titles, and get Gamefly's daily deals all from the palm of your hand. If you're already a Gamefly member, manage your game queue on the go and keep games you like with just one tap. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices. Hey everyone, Half-Life 3 is evidently still not a thing.
At least. Isn't there I think there's like a Twitter feed or something that is half yeah. It just tweets every day, it tweets out
Half-Life's not here.
Still not released or something like
so
that.
So a little controversy this week with a resurrected blog post under which there were some comments from a voice actor who has done some work with Valve, who said that Half-Life 3 isn't even under development because they can't get the motion capture tech to work the way they want to. Because if you think about Half-Life 2, one of the things that was really cool was the animations of the player of the non-player characters would turn to you as Gordon and talk directly to you, and that you know that with motion capture, once you've motion captured, you can't do that kind of stuff. Anyway, this has been a little bit debunked, and who knows what's going on. I think it does raise an interesting question of. Not to really bring it back up, although I have to, because we all miss Half-Life 3, but what the hell's the deal? Will Valve ever make this damn game? Because on the other hand...
Yes, they will make the game.
You sound so confident.
There's no way they are
you
not
You sound
make
so
the
confident.
Game.
Well, they're making Defense of the Ancients and making a shit ton of money off that.
Right.
And they're also making Left 4 Dead 3.
Don't doubt that. That doesn't invalidate any fact. There's no way Half-Life 3 isn't ever coming out.
There was a leak last week. This leak is really interesting. They had, and apparently Valve regularly runs studio tours, which is cool of them, and they have a really cool place. They had in the Dota 2 subreddit people, or some folks who are in the Dota 2 subreddit threads, and during the course of this tour, one of them snapped a pic, and on the screen of someone's workstation was a changelog. And they did a close-up of the changelog, and in the changelog saw reference to Source 2. So, by the way, Source 2 engine apparently well underway. And
could it not be?
How could it not be, right? But also some direct language about a Left 4 Dead 3 multiplayer server being active. So, it sounds like Left 4 Dead 3 is a thing totally being run.
That's awesome.
Rock, Paper, Shotgun. Awesome. Rock, Paper, Shotgun says that they have are anonymous sources who have confirmed that this information is accurate. I mean, if you're an anonymous source, you can confirm anything's accurate. I'd like to confirm that is also accurate. I'd be an anonymous source. What else do we hear about that?
What would you like to see in a Left 4 Dead 3? Because I feel like Left 4 Dead 2 delivered the thing that we all wanted, which was, hey, we can play the other side.
I would like to see missions become even more dynamic and maybe even take a cue from like something like Payday 2 and basically have a decision point in the mission where you're like, well, we could do this or we could do this. And then you maybe end up in a completely different level or, you know, so you can tree these things together. And, you know, so every time you play through it, you're maybe playing through slightly different
player turning that isn't zapping.
Wait, what?
Player turning that isn't so.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So player gets turned in place as opposed to player gets killed and then goes and occupies a zombie. A player gets turned in place and the super zombie is your comrade come back as a zombie.
Interesting.
That would be cool.
As much as I am over zombies, I'm really, really gotten zombie fatigue. The idea of Left 4 Dead 3 makes me eat my words. Like a zombie eats a face, I eat my words about Left 4 Dead 3 because that experience is just so darn fun. And I would really love for them to take it in a whole different place. Take it to, you know, not well, give
I,
us just
I would
levels.
Imagine that you can expect that, because the great discussion that comes out of this is that, who are Valve now? And this is something that some of the posters on NeoGAF have brought
platform
up, and I think
holder.
it's a really good point. Well, they are a free-to-play game maker,
right,
who have a great storefront.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's more than just a great storefront.
It's a great digital distribution platform, yeah, with a great e-commerce system and a great storefront.
And a bunch of good hooks built into it, you know?
So, whatever you expect, my question about Half-Life 3 remains valid in that I don't know, and I think that someone suggests this on GAF, and I think they might be right. I don't know that Valve ever makes another traditional game in the idea of a, you know, start to finish encapsulated, I'm going to sell you a game experience game.
Well, have they ever made a traditional game?
Sure, I mean, Half-Life 2.
But were they those weren't traditional when they first hit the streets.
They came out in boxes and you installed them and played them start to finish.
Oh, you mean retail box.
Yeah, they're not going to say, "Hey Jeff, here's Half-Life 3. Give me $60. Here's the game, you can play it."
Yeah, no, I know.
What do you mean? You don't think that you don't think they'll put out a Portal 3 and a
I don't know if
and
they
even
will.
Even Left 4 Dead 3 you don't think
I it think it's a reasonable question to say that they might not do that anymore, because the models have changed. Look, well, they're making great money off Team Fortress 2 and the money doesn't stop coming in. They're making great money off of Defense of the Ancients 2 and the money doesn't stop coming in.
So you're saying that Left 4 Dead 3 even
Left 4 Dead
is going to look
a
like
whole different
a free to play, yep, you know, give yourself a silly hat for $2.
Well, why does
it run away from
why
zombies?
Stop there? I mean, I think that they will keep the core mechanics sacred because they are gamers at heart. But why does it have to stop there? I think that especially a game like Left 4 Dead, door wide open for customization. I mean, how many of you would love to have really awesome custom characters to fight the zombies with?
I'd like to be the game director for, yeah, some friends. Like, basically be like, oh, they're coming around.
And that would be a cool, that would be a cool feature.
Wasn't that exactly what the original idea of Zombie U when it was an Aliens game was? That's what I saw at E3 like 2 or 3 years ago.
You got me on that. I don't know.
So Ubisoft came out and did this big presentation alongside Nintendo. It was one of their after hours Nintendo partnership. Like, we're excited. It was when the Wii U was announced and they were finally showing games for it.
Right.
And they showed, I can't remember what it was called at that point, but it was an Alien game. And the idea was, people were playing a first-person shooter fighting aliens, and the person with the gamepad was the director dropping bad guys into their world and effing with them. And that game is what eventually became Zombie U.
And Zombie U's multiplayer does do that.
Yeah, does it? I haven't played that. So.
Zombie U's multiplayer is really cool, dude.
And you can drop as one of the players.
Zombie U's multiplayer is one person with the pad and one person with the Wiimote. The person with the pad is the game director, as
right,
you just described it, controlling the zombies and earning points a la Horde mode, and then dispatching your powered up zombies to try and knock out the player. And the player is running around in first person mode.
That's pretty cool.
It's really cool. Yeah, the multiplayer mode in Zombie U as Zombie U, woefully overlooked.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time imagining what a Left 4 Dead 3 could bring to the table that would make me sit up and go, wow, they really flipped the script.
Well, so I don't think it'll be a wow, they flipped the script. I think it'll be a wow, they blew it up into this wide open thing that I can come and dip into and play whenever I want to. They will make it like a Team Fortress 2.
Mm-hmm.
And you will be able to come into it wherever you want. And does that mean that they may have still, I mean, I'm not saying there won't be any box product. There might be some sort of box product to market to, you know, console platforms.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that for the PC player particularly, this will be done under the same model as Team Fortress and Defense of the Ancients, and it'll be a come in and play it. It also gives them the opportunity to, like, open the doors to it as a beta pretty early on,
yeah,
get people looped into it, get you engaged in it, and then really have, I mean, that's kind of the experience you want with Left 4 Dead anyway. It'll be great because it can just be evolving. You're coming back in. You're building up your character. You're going to play it all the time. I think it's a really good fit for Left 4 Dead.
Well,
I think it'll be a really good fit for
adding
Left 4 Dead.
Adding in role-playing elements to Left 4 Dead, I mean, a la Dead Island, I guess.
Create your own survivor.
Yeah, and having that survivor persist over time and get more powerful and develop new skills and things like that. I think that's kind of cool. I like that in Dead Island. And I think having a game that's even a little more structured a la Left 4 Dead would be cool with those kinds of RPG elements. I don't know. I still think it's crazy to think that they won't put out a Half-Life 3. You're saying that even if they do, it'll be some sort of weird free-to-play.
I think that maybe that's – who knows why Half-Life 3 hasn't come to fruition? I mean, there's a number of scenarios out there. It could be as simple as the way Valve operates. There simply isn't someone who's the catalyst within the company to push the game because, right. You know, we know how they operate is very open and very, hey, you want to come work on this, pull up a chair and work on it at the desk. Maybe it's as simple as that. Maybe it is something technology related. You know, if you go back to Keeley's piece on episode 2, they talked about how they were innovating and that was a big piece for them pushing forward. Maybe they
have big ideas and they're waiting
for tech. Maybe Gabriel is in that world and he wants to like Half-Life is the, you know, the platinum crown jewel of their product line, and they don't, you know, they're like, you know what, this is the game, and until we can do the amazing,
that's what my gut says.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I think that, I mean, everybody remembers the Half-Life 2 reveal, and it was literally
amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Doing things that games hadn't done yet.
Well, and that's why it goes back to, I think, Source 2, right? Is that is the nugget that I'm sure they're trying to polish and make sure it's all great and can do, you know, can realize their vision in this new game.
And yet for me, episode 2, which by that standard might be the most mundane of them,
stands
for me as the best moment of Half-Life 2, of Half-Life gaming, period. The best moment for me of Half-Life gaming has been episode 2.
I don't know. Getting the blue gravity gun at the end of Half-Life 2 is one of the greatest moments in gaming.
In my
lifetime.
I agree, but on the whole,
but yes, episode 2 is fantastic,
phenomenal. It left me on such a high. I loved it so much.
And a cliffhanger, and
exactly,
which is why people can't forget about.
So like just to tease you guys, this last little bit, there was a little supporting evidence that's been pointed back to. Apparently, back in June, there was a little security breach. In Jira, and Jira is a bug tracking platform that a lot of developers use. I've only become familiar with it because we use it on our mobile games, and apparently as part of that, there was a window during which Jira tickets were exploitable over the internet, and someone hacked in and
of course,
it's Valve. I mean, as soon as you know about this vulnerability, you're like, shit, I want to know what's on Valve's ticket logs. And they found a lot of email groups. They did find some Left 4 Dead 3. So actually, the Left 4 Dead 3 story has been floating around. But there still is a group, at least an email group, at Valve for Half-Life 3.
There's no way it's not being worked on. There's no way. And I feel like they have such high expectations for themselves that it's not going to come out until it's blowing everybody's socks off.
They want to release it to the sound of thousands of people crapping their pants in unison.
I also,
dude, they will
think,
get that regardless.
Yeah, I know.
I also think
it'll be, you know,
the way the Half-Life 2 launch was absolutely bungled and broken and effed up, I think has a sour taste that still hasn't been expunged from that company. I would guess that there's no way Half-Life 3 isn't announced without it being damn near done. And they go, it's coming out
next month.
Exactly. Because that's what they set out to do with Half-Life 2, and it got screwed. And then, you know, that big hacking situation happened.
That being the case, then we probably won't get to hear about it for a while.
Well, who knows?
Who knows? Well, I mean, they're
every year
well,
at
they're
E3,
building, they're reputed building to be around a 300-person studio, and we know they have a lot of things that they're working on, and they have they have Steam to run. So,
and
there's only so many things you can do at once.
They want to do multi-platform release too, right? So you're talking about finishing the Source engine and then making the Source engine work with, you know, next gen hardware.
And to that end, maybe that's a big part of why Left 4 Dead 3 is here. Maybe Left 4 Dead 3 is the first Source 2 engine game, so they're not, you know, teething.
It's certainly possible, but it would be. That would be the way to introduce. I mean, it's the way they introduced Source. It would be the way to introduce Source 2 would be Half-Life, bitches. You know, here it is.
Left 4 Dead 3, arguably an 800-pound gorilla.
Well, and 780-pound gorilla, but yeah.
Oh, it's 20 pounds shy of 800.
Yeah. I mean, it's not Half-Life 3.
And you're still talking about the Source 2 engine, and you're still going to be able to follow that up with, oh, by the way, if you thought that was cool.
Yeah, you're right.
Wait till you see this.
Open world Half-Life.
That would be, I want the Half-Life portal.
You want whole life.
Whole life. Yeah,
entire life.
Exactly. Entire life.
Plug right. Me in now.
I want the Half-Life Portal mashup game where,
dude,
you know, that they unify those two franchises.
Did you ever mess around with any of the mods that people were?
Yeah.
Yeah, where they're like
so much fun
hacking in the portal gun into Half-Life 2.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
So for your whole life, then, are you excited about the 16-player persistent world Grand Theft Auto 5 multiplayer?
Yes.
I kind of knew. I was watching. I was like, he's going to be excited about that.
Yeah. It looks... The only sour pill along with all that is how much I'm over current gen systems right now. I want if it was being released on the PC.
Does not look so good. Well, it will be 7 months later, 8 months later.
I know. I can't.
I mean, that's
really, you guys looking at those videos.
They're gorgeous.
At the video, you're worried about it.
I'm worried about.
I would have to say that of all the things,
I'm worried about frame rate. I really.
I didn't give a second thought to the platform because I was watching that. I was like thinking about all the cool things we could do.
No. Don't get me wrong. The first thing I thought was, oh, I can't wait to get my hands on this. Right. But there's that. I'm just worried about frame rate. I'm worried. I want it on my PC.
Wait. Where's my I love loving things?
I do love.
He always wants the newest, latest, best now.
I do. So. I got to have it on.
Well, so this will be the best.
But I will know. I know that in a few months it's going to probably come out for PC and.
Dude, I am not. I am not waiting 1 second longer than I have to be able to take some friends down and jump dirt bikes off of a fucking cliff and open my.
Dude, is insane. That moment that you're talking about the base jumping.
I was just like, oh.
Base jumping off of a dirt bike.
Insane.
In the middle of a dirt bike race. In the middle of a dirt bike race, going off the edge of a cliff,
and then there's like. Wave races in the game, and you know, like
arm
golf.
Wrestling,
no, and golf. Like they definitely implied that you could log into the game and go play a multiplayer game of golf with friends.
Yeah, nine whole
There's
courses.
Like,
I think.
Like, let's just go play golf.
Off road racing, on road racing. Oh, and oh, by the way, it's also got a level editor in case there's not enough shit to do. So it's basically big world.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Well, they're, and I think they're actually genius about trickling this out. In the way that they are, instead of being like, dude, here's a massive dump of stuff.
Yeah. So to explain, the online multiplayer aspect of Grand Theft Auto 5 will unlock via what they called a tiny download 2 weeks after the launch. It's going to unlock on October the 1st.
Hold me close, tiny download.
Yeah. I can't. At least they're not charging for it, so we can't be in outrage. It's on the disc. It's on the disc, damn it.
Yeah, free.
It's free, so.
It's Grand Theft Auto everything. It's just sign your way your life now.
And to explain the map editor, by the way, the editor is not a full open world map editor. It allows you to create game modes within the map. So you can do races. What they showed was you could do races and you could set up
deathmatch.
So you could like put position the drops and
the vehicles
and other elements to the deathmatch.
I just am hoping that all of their constant talk about how much the mechanics have been refined really does hold true.
I hope so too.
Because the gunplay really looks great, and every
it feels
time they
like
show
Red Dead,
and every time they show a driving moment, it looks like a driving game, which is what you've always wanted from GTA. Where it's like, I don't want it to be GTA's driving. I want to like hop in,
absolutely
burn out all of a sudden, you know, which is kind of how it looks.
I know
that's fine.
I'm super so stoked good. For it.
And the jets,
yeah,
Benny and the Jets.
Did you guys go to the GTA 5 page? They have a whole, you know how they do those travel guides and stuff? They have the whole.
They did your travel guide, Jeff.
I know.
They did your travel guide.
Yeah. It's really, really. There's some fake political campaign videos on there that are hysterical.
And you can like get a G6. You know, you can like earn enough money to get a G6.
And you can go and do heists. You can go and do missions.
Buy your apartment thing. Like. Buy your own.
So,
and this promise of them constantly working on adding new content over time
and community,
to be a persistent world.
And community. So here's the thing that I'm curious about. Persistent worlds. Okay. I have my mind eye image of that. So it's 16. They repeated this phrase several times. 16-player persistent world. So does that mean that when I fire up a game, it's my Grand Theft Auto world.
Yeah, we go in and mess with it. Sort of like Fable used to be when you play co-op Fable.
Well, is it like Minecraft?
Right.
Where I have my server and it's my, and so this is my persistent Grand Theft Auto 5 world.
And you invite 15 of your buddies.
And we all come in, we play, we fuck shit up and it's fucked up permanently. Yeah. And you know, we go rob a bank over here and the bank's been robbed. We set up my apartment, it's my apartment. And then if I go play with somebody else, then I drop into Jeff's world and that's Jeff's persistent world. And now maybe
That would be a detriment to me. That would be a bummer.
Really?
Yeah. Because I found that to be annoying in Fable. It's different in Minecraft, I think, but in that scenario, I tend to feel like I'm not pushing my story forward. And it's hard for me to want to go and hang out in Garnet's world, because when I come back to my empty old world, all the stuff that I had fun doing didn't happen. And
unless they figure out a way to tie those two.
Right.
So you do,
which I would hope
you do a mission in Garnet's world, and then all of a sudden it counts for you as well.
Grand Theft Infinite.
That's right. Yeah. Lighthouses coming soon.
I mean, that would be a way to do
BioShock
it.
BioShock Auto.
Everything that happens. The problem is, if you do everything that happens for all 16 of you happens, then what if two of those people had different things that happened previously?
But it's open worldish. I think that the multiplayer experience isn't going to be as narrative driven. And so this
It seems to say new characters in multiplayer.
Right.
All
so
this
there'll
stuff.
Be. But I think that what they're trying to go for is, instead of it is two things going on at once: linear story driven single player, and then open world multiplayer events. Things happen, and you go into your world, and things happen, something else could happen in your world, something else could happen in my world, and you'd still get to participate in it. But if it's going to be a persistent world, I don't see any other way it can be set up other than I have mine and you have yours.
There has to be something for you to spend your cash on, right? Like that you earn in game.
Yeah.
Right. So I think the persistent part is going to be like
what you bought,
your apartment. Like, you know, maybe the apartments are located in different places.
That makes more sense.
You know, but like I think the actual, if you look at past GTA games, and it's not necessarily.
But then how does that work? Would there be, like, when I go to create a multiplayer game, would it just create a multiplayer game like on a dedicated server and populate it with all of our apartments?
I mean, one way it could work is that I can go visit Garnet's apartment when Garnet and I are playing in a multiplayer game, and when we're not, I go there and there's nothing there. Or, you know, it's just
that sounds
empty,
probably about right.
Building or whatever, you know?
But they'd have to have millions of buildings.
Well, no, you need to have 16 because you can only have 16 people in one world at a time.
But how would they handle, what if you played with me today but played with Alex tomorrow?
Alex's thing exists in the same physical space yours did. It just looks like Alex's this time.
Oh, okay. That's what you're saying. So they need 16 slots.
Right.
Right.
I mean,
if everybody's going to have their own apartment.
I don't know. I think it'll be that each of us will have our own persistent world, because then it is persistent, and that they'll have modifications that happen. And I think that ultimately, if you play down that road, that would be really interesting, because then you are, every time you open your world, sort of simultaneously building what happens, but also having like a covenant with everybody who comes in of like, what if someone comes in and they decide that, you know what, they're going to mess your game up.
Yeah.
Well, and did you guys ever play those co-op specific missions that they did for Red Dead after the fact? Mm-hmm. It was like a patch of missions that were, you know, co-op. So it was a full story and like had setup and, you know, beginning, middle, and end. Sometimes were multi-stage,
as much as all that just messing with stuff and, you know, leaping off of things and doing all that stuff is going to be a blast, which it reminds me of like old Crackdown co-op days. But the real exciting stuff, especially when I heard you guys talking about Payday 2, is getting together and pulling off a heist together. I think that's going to be a blast.
Should be a lot of fun. Yeah.
So basically what you're saying is the We Can Confirm crew really ought to go be a crime crew, because we're into this whole, at least virtually, we're into this whole idea of like robbing shit and stealing jewelry.
Hey, I'm unemployed right now. What's your excuse? I'm just training for my next.
It is a fun fantasy wish fulfillment, and it does mix together that exciting sort of planning strategic level and then the fun action of pulling it off and the unpredictable happening. And Monaco's great too. Monaco is
Monaco is awesome.
Yeah.
And it abstracts its things to a degree, but does it in a really, really, really good way. Okay. Well, that's probably a good place to take a little pause. Oh, I mean, unless we want to investigate, you know, Xbox One not requiring Kinect.
I liked what Spicer tweeted when he said it's the Benjamin Buttons of console launches.
Yeah. We're all going.
It's pretty funny. Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, Mark Witten has been doing a IGN answer session sort of thing. And he recently said this when talking about Kinect. Games use Kinect in a variety of amazing ways, from adding voice to control your squad mates to adding lean and other simple controls beyond the controller to full immersive gameplay. That said, like online, the console will still function if the Kinect isn't plugged in. Although okay. You won't be able to use any of the features or experiences that explicitly use the sensor. Well, of course.
Wait
not.
A minute. I can't use the sensor if I'm not using sensor the sensor.
If it's not plugged in.
It's not plugged in.
If I'm not using the sensor, I can't use the sensor. Here, let me just say this before we get all snarky and superior.
Let's not get snarky.
We shit on them when they announce it. And we tell them that it was a bad idea. And then when they take it out, we shit on them again.
I actually
for
tweeted about
it out.
This to a bunch of people who are being all like, oh my God, I can't believe they're just backpedaling on everything. And my response was, didn't you?
That's exactly what you wanted them to do.
Wanted them to do. So yeah. Now you're pissed off that they're doing what you
the,
wanted
the
them
frustrating
to do.
Part of that, of course, is that it seems like they weren't committed to the things that they said they were committed to. But they're. It does sound like new voices have come into that company and gone, hey, all these things we told people about that everybody hated, let's not do that.
Well, you know, here's the consumer response that is legitimate to me, is that you are still, and by legitimate, I don't mean that your opinions aren't legitimate. I just mean that this smacks very sensible to me. At this point, if you are saying that you can play the console without the Kinect attached to it, and you are putting a Kinect in every box at this price point, why not sell one now at a lower price point without the Kinect? And I realize that the devil's advocate says, oh, well, then now you can't guarantee to developers that a Kinect is in there. Fine, you've made a great Kinect, you've really improved it, but at some point you can say, hey, I could sell this thing for whatever lower price because of the Kinect not being in there, or is the Kinect device that inexpensive a piece of hardware, which I'm not convinced of, given the sophistication and additions they made to
what
it.
What do developers, I mean, I wonder what signal it's sending to them, right? Like, oh, well, now people may or may not use it, so do we...
Because you've already lost the guarantee, yeah, because now no one has to hook it up.
I just think that
they'll have it, but
they'll have it, but it's like in the closet next to their plastic guitar.
Anything that is a camera pointed at you should not be a requirement. And they figured that out way late, but they did, and that's the case. Now, I also like the fact that one comes in every box. Would I like to pay less to not have a Kinect? Yes, I would. Am I glad that every developer knows that every person who buys an Xbox One is going to have a Kinect? I kind of do, because maybe we'll see more than just these sort of tacked on features.
But that's the problem. You see, even if I know as a developer that you have it, but you no longer have to have it hooked up or use it, it's not a convincing argument. I no longer feel comfortable that, oh, this person's going to walk into the store and look at my game and not worry about it, because they may look at my game and go, I don't have my Kinect hooked up. Screw this.
No,
I don't
but,
do Kinect games.
But I mean, that's Kinect now, it's like you walk into a store and you're like, man, that... Because I am one of the few that did not buy a Kinect this past console generation.
No, I don't have one.
And oh, okay.
Ariel has one. I mean, and we have it hooked up on her 360, but I don't have one.
Yeah,
have
but one. So I think it's just a matter of, like, when you walk into a store, if it's a separate accessory and you're like, oh, this game looks really cool. Oh, it requires Kinect, so add, you know, another $110 on top of the game price. Is this game worth, you know, $150? As opposed to, you already have it. Give it a shot, you know?
You also don't, you know, they also don't know that you have your current consoles plugged into the internet. They don't know that, but they add features for that all the time because they all support it. You know what I mean?
That is a interesting but different argument. They're adding features, but it's not required in order to be able to play the games. In other words, you're not, short of a multiplayer only game, you don't have any requirement for an internet connection. But if you're going to require a Kinect, like, you can't play Dance Central without a Kinect.
You could legitimately have a game start up and say, please plug in your Kinect. And it's not unreasonable because everybody has one that bought your game.
And if you know, if that sort of thing
bothers
you.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, peruse the back of the box. I'm sure there'll be some sort of demarcation of, like, people that are...
But I don't think that's what the third-party developer worries about. The third-party developer worries about whether or not a person wants to play with a Kinect or not. And having had it required originally, it's the same as, like, the game sharing thing. It's like, when it was required and was part and parcel of everything, I think there was a stronger unwritten contract with the player that you're going to put the Kinect in front of your television and you're going to hook it up to your machine. And now that is... no longer part
of
the deal.
This frustrates me, this argument, because this is exactly my point about Always On.
I agree with you.
That feature set is much more attractive to me in potential than the feature set of the Kinect. But I think the downside for Kinect is much higher for me personally, which is the idea of forcing human beings to have a camera pointed at them. Yep. That seems crazy, and I applaud a company recognizing that, although much later than they should have, I applaud them realizing that they can't force people to have a camera plugged in.
And though I understand the lack of trust, and I don't think this is exclusive to Microsoft, I think we would be maybe not as distrustful, but we would be distrustful of other manufacturers. There is also a option in the settings for the machine. So in addition to being able to turn your Kinect off like they're just the normal thing, you can go into the settings and completely disable the thing. So you can tell it, you know, to shut down all of its sensors and everything. So that'll, you know, that does, of course, that turns off the ability for it to auto-wake. You won't be able to talk to things. You won't be able to have it, like, sense you when you walk in the room. But you can also go into settings and turn all that shit off
completely. I heard, though, that when you try to do that, it goes, what are you doing, Dave?
Hello, computer.
Hello, computer.
So the advantage to doing it this way, which Whitten did bring up, is that if you do it that way and then you put a Kinect game in, it will prompt and say, hey, this is a Kinect game. You have your Kinect sensor off in order to play this game. I'm sure it'll say
the same thing if you don't have it plugged in.
That probably would. Yeah. But then you'd have to go and get it. I'm telling you, what's going to happen?
You can get a Kinect for your Kinect and you can go, Xbox, Bing, Kinect sensor.
It's in your closet.
Xbox, grab Kinect sensor. Xbox, bring Kinect sensor over to me.
Attach that along with just involve a Roomba and you're all set.
It's going to happen. You know, there are going to be people who buy their Xbox One and put the Kinect sensor in the closet. It's going to be up in a shelf in the closet, and it is going to be next to the plastic instruments.
It just frustrates me that we argue both sides, because I think it was a pretty clear bonehead move to force people to point a camera at themselves and say the only way to use this product is if a camera is constantly on and, you know, functional, maybe not on, but functional and pointed at you.
Right.
And then when they go, okay, we get it. You can unplug it and the thing will still work fine. We go, well, now nobody knows if there's going to be a camera pointed at you. It's like, well, that's a good thing. And we have to recognize that that's a good thing. And developers still know that every person that buys it is going to have a Kinect sensor. And I as much as I would like to pay less to not have a Kinect sensor, I think it's really cool that this is a built-in standard feature of this device.
You know what? The futurist in me thinks that this is going to be something we look back on maybe as soon as 5 years from now and chuckle about, because we're all going to be walking into a number of connected devices all over our house.
My TV already has stuff like that.
And it's doing the same thing. There's no way it knows something without a sensor.
See, I want to be the guy that has the business that makes all the little condoms that you have to put on all these devices to block the camera and the microphone, right?
And they're going
to
be, look.
Here's the Kinect condom. Here's your, you know, internet. Sorry.
Yeah. It's a whole new era of tinfoil hats.
Derailed.
Right.
Whole new era of tinfoil hats. All right. We will give you a little time to pull out the aluminum foil and start folding your own chapeau. While we take a little break and come back for the second half of Weekend Confirmed.
Sure, you can pay $60 if you want to play a video game. But what if you want to play all the latest video games? Try Gamefly.com, the number one video game rental service. Right now, you can sign up for just $5.95, their lowest price ever. Gamefly has over 8,000 titles, including the hottest new releases like DMC Devil May Cry, The Walking Dead, and Hitman Absolution. And here's how easy it is. Just sign up, select your games, and Gamefly will ship them directly to your door. You can keep the games as long as you want, there are no late fees, and you can cancel at any time. Once you're done playing a game, send it back, and Gamefly will send you the next available game on your list. Now you can also play hundreds of PC games with Gamefly's new Unlimited PC Play, which is free for members. Gamefly also saves you money by letting you try your favorite games before buying them. If you really like the game you're playing, simply click Keep It on the Gamefly website, and it's yours at a deeply discounted price. And if you're still unsure, which you shouldn't be at this point, but if you're still unsure, we're offering our listeners a special offer. This is just for Weekend Confirmers. Go to gamefly.com/weekendconfirmed for an extended 15-day free trial. That's gamefly.com/weekendconfirmed. And sign up today.
All right, everybody. Hope you have finished your foil origami. We are back and ready to dig back in. Have an introduction for you, though. Joining us now is Shaq News staff writer extraordinaire and head of our Kelly Clarkson fan club.
And usual donut supplier.
And donut. Ozzy, you are a man of many talents.
Tinfoil hats don't taste very good. I just want to throw that out there. But yes, sorry, I'm a little late. I actually just came back from a hands-on of Takedown Red Saber, which is the Kickstarter project that's going to get under. That's actually already in development. Should be out by the end of next month. It's a Rainbow Six style shooter.
I think you're supposed to say that with more drama. Takedown Red Saber.
That's why you do the audible reads.
Gotta have more drama to it. But the weary. Well, it, by the way, do you want to tell us about that, or is it embargo? Can you tell us?
The embargo actually should be up by the time this show goes live. So. Yeah, as far as I know, it's a six on six competitive multiplayer game. It's also a 6-player co-op. They're aiming for more of a realistic type of shooter, much like what Rainbow Six used to be in terms of the enemies are a lot more sophisticated. They're randomly placed, so it's running. You know, trying to clear the area or trying to complete objectives is not as easy as, like, you know, just running and gunning. You have to exercise
a lot.
So
it's like the terrorist takedown missions.
Exactly like that.
Interesting.
You had a lot
of fun with those.
You have to exercise a lot more strategy. You can't just rush through it or else, you know, they're gonna absolutely plug you. And there's a lot of different gun types, a lot of different ammunition types. Everything's played realistically. In terms of body armor, you have, like, different types. Like, they can... You wear heavier body armor, they can hear your footsteps, the enemies can actually hear you, you know.
Has anyone ever proven that, by the way? If you're wearing heavy body armor, can you not soften your footfalls?
Well, I usually wear like Uggs or something.
Yeah, when you're wearing body armor?
Yeah.
Sure, you definitely want to wear a soft-soled shoe.
Moon boots, and, perhaps.
Yeah. I'm just saying. Like, I realize if you're like trying to move quickly, obviously you would thud and thunder, but doesn't it seem like, regardless of what you're wearing, you could, you know, soft pad a little bit?
And there's also a lot of attention to detail in that game, which is really awesome. Like, if you're taking, like, a giant sniper rifle, you can't just actually walk up to the wall because you'll have to put it down. It actually has really accurate collision detection, which is one of those little things, but it means a lot if you're aiming for more of a realistic touch.
What's the production schedule for it?
They're saying that it's set to release at the end of September. On PC.
Oh, that's coming up really quick.
Soon. On PC and Xbox 360.
And they kickstarted it. Is that what you were saying? So do they have a publisher now? How are they running?
They are being published by 505 Games. And they've actually picked up a lot of people along the way. In fact, we remember talking a couple months ago about Zipper getting shuttered. They actually got a lot of those devs to come join the art team. So they've actually picked up some people along the way.
So you going to be sharing some of this in prosaic form along with images on the site?
It should be a multiplayer preview should be up around the time of this podcast. So,
all right, that's got to be quite the contrast, because the reason that I especially wanted to haul Ozzy off the couch in the booth and in here is because he was our man at the Call of Duty Ghosts multiplayer extravaganza.
And by the way,
if you didn't watch the video of this thing, it was an extravaganza complete with, like, a grandstand and a light show and competitive multiplayer teams that rose up out of the stands and to ascend their spot before they played their game.
And I can confirm, Call of Duty Ghosts does have multiplayer.
Excellent.
Breaking news.
Well done, sir.
Yeah, but it's...
I guess I owe you $5.
I absolutely love that
$1.
That Activision just goes completely out of their way for these events, even though there's so much of it that doesn't feel necessary. Like, look, I'm...
Like all of it?
like the fact that they're talking about, like, hey, it's a new single from Eminem off his next album. Like, that's...
Well, actually... And there were some cool things about this reveal, and we'll talk about all that. And I don't want to sound just overly cynic, but the thing that cracked me up was that he literally stood there and said the same thing that I've heard them say on that same stage site presentation before about Call of Duty, which is nothing was sacred. Well, okay, well, this is the second or third or fourth time nothing was sacred, and by the way...
But due to the limitations of our engine, there was only so much we could do.
And what the fuck does that even mean, by the way? Nothing was sacred. We examined everything. We just like all of it a lot, so we're doing it again.
and in that spirit, I actually went hands-on with the multiplayer throughout the day yesterday, and there's so much of it that feels... very Call of Duty.
But for a lot of folks, that'll be a great thing. Let's not lie. There's a lot of folks who will really, really savor that.
I actually had a multiplayer preview go up earlier on Thursday, and one of the things I said at the end was, it feels like a refined Call of Duty formula, but it's not introducing really anything all that new. It's just another upgrade, which just is kind of been the case for the last couple of years.
I'm listening to the tone of your voice, and it sounds to me like for you, that's not a great thing. Now, when I was watching their presentation, something that jumped out to me when they were showing things such as, oh, we've added a knee slide. So I think a lot of things you would say, well, oh, like that's just a fluffy thing. But it's that sort of refinement that maybe you don't get the first time around. And that if you don't try to, like, did they need to, is Call of Duty a game that they needed to in some way
reinvent the wheel? No,
because they have the advantage. Actually, the advantage is that they're coming back to it time over time and can refine it. And maybe we could even argue that at some point in time they've lost the pace a little bit and said, because every time they come back to it, they're like, nothing was sacred. Well, you know what, maybe something should be sacred, and instead of saying nothing is sacred and trying to figure out how to tweak it and turn it different, how about trying to figure out how to just to polish and add new pieces that make it a better game experience?
Could not agree more. That is a really, really good point.
But that's what they did.
I think that's a lot of series could take that note to heart, because it is, even if you are doing something that's very, very successful and iterative, trying to, add a little bells and whistles to it that don't necessarily, enhance that core pillar that you built. Which I think, sometimes these games get lost in, like, well, what do we add? What do we do? We can't just be more gun models. Like, what do we?
But then they show something like that knee slide, and I'm like, that's actually really fucking cool and useful.
There are a lot of little touches, like the knee slide, the vaulting without the aid of any buttons. The corner leaning especially is one of those little touches that no one's really going to, wave a banner for, but it really does mean a lot when you start playing it.
So for those who didn't see it, the corner leaning that they've added now is a context-specific lean that doesn't require the player do anything special. If you're behind cover at a corner and you jiggle the stick over to look out, you're not gonna strafe out. You're just gonna lean over the way a person would at that corner cover. So that's really cool.
That is cool.
I thought that was really cool. I think the reason that I was a little disappointed is because, as we've mentioned several times, we are moving into the next generation of consoles. So I was hoping that Call of Duty would have just a little bit more for, its next-gen debut.
You mean visual punch?
Visual punch, and maybe even a little bit of gameplay punch.
Visual punch-wise, I was watching this on the stream, and they had great, by the way, they had great stream. It's nice to be Activision to have enough money to buy all that bandwidth, because the stream was fantastic, watching it 720p. And I was surprised to hear Ozzy tell me what platform he was playing
on. Yeah, Garnet, watching that stream, what would you say that they were playing on?
I was pretty sure they were playing on 360.
They were not playing on 360. They were playing on Xbox One. If you think that's very underwhelming, it is, because it looks so much like a current gen title. I was just incredibly disappointed by it. I can understand it a little bit, because
knowing everyone has a Kinect.
Because one of the things that they were saying throughout the day yesterday was they want to make the barrier of entry to next gen as seamless as possible.
Well, of course they do, because they want to transition as many people over as possible. It makes perfect sense.
Right. Of course. So they were going on with the idea that people are going to buy this on 360, and then at some point in the future, they're going to buy it on the Xbox One. So I can kind of get where they're coming from. Where they're not going to play on 360 and just be missing a bunch of features and then go on Xbox One and jump into something new. They want to make them as similar as possible. So in that sense, I understand it. But when you're looking at some of the really gorgeous games out there, even Battlefield 4 right now looks incredibly gorgeous on the Xbox One.
Yeah, I mean, look, all we have is media to go from, but from what I've seen, Battlefield 4 outclasses Ghost at every turn.
Well, and Battlefield 3 visually on PC, at any rate,
true,
was the same sort of story.
True.
Yeah, and in terms of multiplayer, they were saying that they're going to start going on a giant world tour of about 10 cities or so. unveiling multiplayer modes as they go. So yesterday,
and letting you and letting the public play.
That's right. And yesterday they only had two available. They had Search and Rescue, which is kind of a combination of the old Search and Destroy missions, and Kill Confirmed, which the idea is you're two sides, you're disarming a bomb in one of two locations, and you only have one. You only have one life. You don't respawn unless your teammate picks up your fallen dog tags.
So that's the resuscitation method, is getting the dog tag.
Right.
Now, can the enemy get your dog tag and kill you permanently?
And kill you permanently, yes. That is absolutely how it works. It's very suited to a close-quarter combat. And, in fact, there actually was a sniper in one of the games that I was playing, and he wasn't faring very well because, yeah, he kept picking us off, but we just kept picking up the dog tags and everyone kept respawning. So it's a lot more suited to close-quarter combat. There's another game mode that I thought sounded... must have sounded like a great idea on paper, but in practice it doesn't actually work so much. And that's Cranked. And Cranked is kind of a team deathmatch, but...
You play as Jason Statham.
Actually,
well, it is that.
It literally is that.
Do you really play as Jason Statham?
Well, no, you don't...
Not literally.
Not literally.
According to the new definition of literally, it literally is that.
You know, it's really funny because I've been saying like on Twitter all week about the difference between literally and figuratively, but that's a whole different thing. No, but it literally is lifted out of the concept of Crank, which is just anytime you get a kill, you're suddenly going to have a 30-second timer on the clock, and you have to keep killing in order to reset that timer, because if it goes down, you explode. Yeah, that would have been really cool to see. I didn't see that at any point yesterday, because literally...
It's funny, because in their demo, no one exploded either.
Exactly, because once you actually get a kill and the timer starts going down, it'll go down 1 or 2 seconds, and oops, someone killed you. So, and that could be because we were playing on like some smaller maps, like there was a...
You're saying it's just hard enough to survive for 30 seconds at all?
Pretty much. Like even
that was symptomatic. Jeff, that was sort of, I mean, if you didn't watch the video, that was sort of what was happening when the Marine, you know, when they had the Marines and some of the Optics Gamers folks playing. And that was what was happening there, is like someone would get the boot. By the way, the thing about Crank that's cool is not only do you get a 30-second countdown,
you get a buff.
But you get a buff. Hmm. So, and they stack. So as you keep killing, you keep stacking buffs. And so you're getting progressively more badass, but you keep counting down faster and faster. So you're like, it's like becoming this crazy, I got to kill again. But no one was able to successfully no one got to the point where their timer ran out, because they get a kill and then just, I guess, due to the frantic nature of it and the close quarters of the maps, they get killed from somebody.
For that matter, no one even really got to use the buffs. I mean,
no, not really.
I mean, it's like, all right, I'm dead. So time to start over.
They also introduced a really
cool... Sounds like I was playing it.
They also introduced a pretty interesting mechanic called field orders. And I don't know, were you able to play with the field orders?
I was actually playing with the field orders enabled. Like once you score a kill, like someone will like drop a briefcase on top of their corpse. You pick it up and it'll give you like an order like oh, shoot an enemy from behind, for example. And once if you accomplish it, you get like an extra boost of XP, which is a pretty cool idea.
Well, and you get a supply drop.
I missed the supply drop.
You get a supply drop on the map. And one of the things that they were pointing out, at least in the match that was done in the video, was that by completing it, you would get like the Hydra, of course, because you could go batshit insane. So, they were interesting. Like another one of them was get a kill from prone position. So you're like...
Well, I got that one. I wasn't able to do that at
all. Yeah, so everyone was picking it up.
I can barely get a kill standing, much less a prone position.
Oh, and real quick callback, 2 seconds. The achievements for Payday are pretty hysterical.
I haven't looked at it.
There's some really funny, like, I would never think to do this. Kind of along the lines of, I mean, not as elaborate as the carry the gnome through Half-Life, mm-hmm. you know, to the end, but sort of similar.
We got to get on that. We got to get on some, trading some cards, too, of course.
Yeah.
Oh, you guys on the Steam trading card train?
So before we sound completely negative about Ghost, I'll say this from having watched it, and you played it, so I'd be curious to know if this was the case from your experience, is that I thought that it demoed on that video exceedingly well. Talking about a game that is a couple of 3 months away from release and was playing rock solid smooth, weathered a live demo of people playing it in multiplayer without any problems whatsoever. You know, frame rate was running great. It looked like a lot of fun. It looks like they have a good amount of bit to polish on it. Now, I mean, yeah, it's Call of Duty. So if you don't like Call of Duty, you're not going to like it. But I came away from that looking at like, wow, if I'm a Call of Duty fan, I could get kind of excited about this.
Don't let my cynicism throw you. I think at the end of yesterday's presentation, I was with Andrea yesterday for the presentation, and I was telling her, the worst thing you could possibly say about this is it's more Call of Duty. And that's not, well, it's a little disappointing. It's not bad. It's still fun. It's still addictive. And I guess there is one addition that they made, and that's the idea of dynamic destructible environments, which is my personal favorite addition to the whole Call of Duty series. And you were talking about a supply drop where someone would possibly find like a maybe a nuke or something like that. And while I didn't find one of those, someone that I was playing against did. And when they dropped that, not only did it kill everyone on my team, it blew up the map. Like, you saw like a giant flash, and then suddenly, like, once the flash faded, everything was in flames. Everything was just like the buildings had fallen apart. Really cool stuff. But it also
was
goes.
Was there any refrigerator around for you to hop into?
There were no refrigerators available, sadly.
Well, let's see if they can handle that as well as Battlefield 4. Because one of the things I think that's most dramatic about the Battlefield 4 demo was the, you know, bringing down the skyscraper.
Right.
And that certainly looks like, you know, monumental scale sort of stuff.
I would be very curious as well to see how.
But look, there's a lot more to it. I think some of the stuff that they're doing outside. I mean, I think that we sort of expected they'd have the down the gun in the game action part down. We probably all had a pretty good idea what to expect from the visual quality of the game engine. So, you know, some of the other things they've done here are pretty cool. Like, for instance, this whole squad thing that they've come up with is very cool. So now you have, so first of all, you create your own character, and they really played that up a lot. There's 20,000 elements of customization, and you, whoever you are, you know, whatever you're playing, you have 10 character slots. And you can customize 10 different characters for playing in the game. And each one of those characters can prestige once. So you've got a lot of opportunity there to play with that squad. And then you can play with them in squad-based games. But here's where it really starts to get interesting, is that as you're playing those characters, much like Forza has the Drivatar that starts to learn how you drive and save your AI point and save your characteristics as an AI, it starts to save characteristics of how you played as the AI for those squad players. And then I can now start playing games where I go online and Jeff, you've created your squad of Jeff 1, Jeff 2, Jeff 3, Jeff 4, Jeff 5, and I can go online and
Jeff 5
and play my squad against your squad, even if you're not online, because you've saved your squad up to the cloud, mm-hmm. and they're sitting there with their customizations and everything you've done with them, and I can go play them, and I can play against them? I can play against them.
Hmm.
Right, so I can go face off against your squad, and I can send my squad in to go face off, or we can all gather together and be like, hey, let's go take on Jeff's squad. He's got a really good squad.
Hmm.
Like, some really cool, clever, fun stuff.
That is a really awesome concept. I'd love to know what the variables are that they're tracking.
Who knows?
Yeah. In terms of making
how the AI gets put together.
It's sort of trying to make a first person shooter version of racing ghosts.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The Drivatar thing.
Yeah.
And I think it's really cool. I think this idea of me being able to form up my squad, and then it pulls also from mobile games, right? It's like I have my crew or whatever that I put together, and now people can come challenge them.
Asynchronous multiplayer.
It's asynchronous multiplayer. It's a really fun, cool idea.
Really cool idea is that if Jeff's not around and his entire squad is AI, they can still earn XP for him. And they can still level them up, which is a pretty cool idea as well.
Cool. I don't have to even play.
Yeah, you do have to play some. You're going to have to play and create your characters.
Turn back on as like Garnet slaughtered your squad.
Get out there and earn me some experience.
So I think that some of those ideas are really cool. I could see myself getting engaged by that part, simply of going in, building up my characters, you know, having them online. And it's like also very fun because we all enjoy, you know, I think Horde mode demonstrated how much room there is for people to get together. We haven't cracked the nut on campaign cooperative, but just Horde mode style cooperative, people dig that. It's easy to dive in, and this adds a personal level to it. It's like, hey, I'm not just playing a Horde mode, I'm playing a Horde mode against Jeff's squad.
Wait a minute, what do you mean we haven't cracked the nut on campaign cooperative?
I mean that despite a lot of people including it, it's not something that people engage in a regular super regular basis.
People didn't engage in the Halo co-op? I mean, I remember people that were really into that at the time.
I would love to see the telemetry. I would venture a guess that a dominant number of people played Halo 4 to completion solo.
Well, the most successful campaign co-op thing's got to be like Borderlands.
It's got to be Borderlands.
Yeah, it's got to be.
And then Borderlands is, I mean, we can call it campaign, but really it's a series of missions after missions after missions,
right,
which is why it works, right? It's more of a Diablo-alike.
Right.
I was really enjoying the Gears of War Judgment
co-op. Dead Space 3 co-op was pretty cool.
Was it?
Yeah. The asymmetrical, rather. Because you'd, you know, have situations where one character would be seeing something and be like, dude, there's...
Oh, that was really cool.
And then be like, oh, no, I don't see that. What are you talking about? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, Jeff and I were playing Dead Space 3 co-op, and he was just like, are you seeing this? I go, I don't see anything. I don't know what you're talking about.
Because one of the characters has PTSD, and so he's slowly breaking down throughout the course of the story, and it's not fully realized.
See also Fear 3.
Yeah. Yeah, similar.
All right, so... Are you walking away? So you guys are like, not plus, but the funny thing is a ton of people listening to this show right now will be playing Ghost multiplayer. I'll probably play it for a while. Sure. Although we had this interesting discussion in the thread. I've progressively over the last couple, especially Call of Duties, fallen out of multiplayer faster and faster. And with Black Ops 2, it literally was, and by the way, I'm using that word the right way this time, no more than a couple of weeks before I was disengaged and moving on.
That's because there's so much more out there now. There's a lot more competition than there used to be.
That's probably a good point. That's probably a very good point.
There were a couple of good
games. Everybody's chasing it.
Yeah, there were a couple of good games out there during Modern Warfare and the first World at War. But when you look at what we have now and what's available now, and so many games like the Skyrims of the world, like The Witcher, take up like hundreds of hours. Like there's not enough time to, just keep playing Call of Duty multiplayer when there's so much more out there.
Don't I just know it? Hey, this actually brings up a interesting question. One of the we did some listener questions from this week. Runner Matt threw this one in, and I kind of like this. It's a good time to interject here. He says, do you have a go-to game for when you don't really want to engage or think too much? You know, that sort of cupcake game. You know, just something to dive into, have a great, delicious bite, enjoy the sweetness of it or whatever, and move on. For Runner Matt, it's either Madden or a driving game. Neither of those could be mine, because those would be way too intense.
Right.
But I get what he's getting at. Bailey, for him, it was Geometry Wars. Was that for a while?
It used to be for a
Geometry
long time.
Was a long time, right? But doesn't have one now. It's kind of doesn't know what that's going to be. DigiSim, also Australia, says, I often come back to Pinball Arcade and Zen Pinball for a quick fix.
Those are great.
What used to be that for me was Pixel Junk Eden.
Really?
Yeah.
Eden was a really good one, and that would fit into mine. I wrote down for me, it's music games. It's all of them.
Rock Band.
Oh, Rock Band's a really good one for that. Yeah,
that's music probably games the one.
That's
that
a really good
to.
One too.
Yeah. Rock Band is probably the one that I still put in, and nowadays it's karaoke machine with the girlfriend and friends or whatever, but that's kind of my unwind. Have a glass of wine.
Yeah, I guess it sort of depends on what sort of time commitment you're talking about too.
Yeah.
Because what happens with me in Rock Band is that also generally there's an adult beverage involved.
Yeah, of course.
And so it's still a commitment. It might not be as much of an attention commitment, but it's a time commitment, because it's like, oh, we're going to sit down and play a song or two, and then I'm probably going to go online and be like, oh, I need to buy another couple of songs, so I want something new to play, and then we'll keep on playing for a while. I haven't done this in a long time, but that's sort of that cycle.
Mobile games are great for this too. Games like Triple Town and
Whole Other World.
Peggle.
Don't say it. Don't say it.
Don't say Peggle.
I have not. I have never played Candy Crunch. I have not.
Crush.
See?
Yeah. See.
Don't even know. See. That's how much I don't play it.
Yeah.
Got yourself lucky.
I haven't played Candy Munch either. But
damnable Puzzles and Dragons.
Oh my. Puzzles and Dragons. Yeah. What even works like that for me now too is Rogue Legacy. I can zone out and just kind of get in the zone of.
You love that game.
I need
to play that game.
It's my game of the year up until this point.
I'm going to have to play that game. I'm sad. I'm going to have to play that game.
Does Animal Crossing not fall in this category?
So that's an interesting one that you brought up, because I thought about that. And you know what? I think that Animal Crossing used to fall into this category, and that it is a testament to how much New Leaf actually brings more to the game, that it does not as much fall into that category, because there's so many things that go on inside the game. And I find myself engaging a little more intensely with New Leaf than I did with prior versions. That's not to say that you can't do it. You can. You could actually play it both ways, because there are times when I pop on New Leaf and I just hop in and I'm going to go fish some, or I'm going to go harvest my fruit, or I'm going to go to the island. But there's other times when I'm playing a little more intensively and really going around and talking to all the citizens and finding out what sort of little things might pop up with them. I mean, granted, it's like hide and go seek or,
I'll agree with Jeff that iOS has really cracked that nut as far as the good time waster. It's something that you'll always go back to just to play for a couple of minutes, especially something like Ridiculous Fishing is just an awesome game that you can just play for maybe 1 or 2 minutes at a time and just keep going back to it over and over and over again. It's crack.
But New Leaf is like that. Animal Crossing New Leaf is, I'm into 4 weeks of just playing it. I might not play it every single day, but I bet you I play it at least every other day, and I bet you I play it at least half an hour every other day. Looking for stuff and being interested in keeping up my house and figuring out like what sign of furniture I'm going to put in it. I mean, it's just it does definitely feed that, but I think that the funny thing is, like, his thing was, what's your not wanting to engage or think too much game? And I do find in Animal Crossing that I am thinking some. Maybe it's not super cerebral, but I'm thinking about, like, well, what do I want to accomplish next? Like, do I want to go make some money and pay off bells? Do I want to go, you know, fishing? Do I want to go, you know, looking for different furniture?
And admittedly, none of those decisions sound incredibly stressful.
But it's more thoughtful than, you know, what I put down here for me, which was all these music games. Like the number one go to for me for this is still Rez. Still like my super go-to game for this.
I don't know, that game's stressful.
Do you ever get into Dyad?
That's probably a little
more stressful.
Loved Dyad.
You know, I bought it not long ago.
Awesome.
And I really enjoyed it, but it's a little more intense.
Oh, it is.
It's super intense. But it melts your face.
Yeah. I mean, eventually you're...
But you're right. You were right. I actually really did love Dyad.
That's so
really
good.
Luminous.
Luminous,
and it's about Rez being stressful. It's like, thing is, I've played Rez so many times now that I don't play... Rez, I just zone out with it.
Mm-hmm.
Especially like I mean usually I'll just like skip straight and play like the fifth level or sometimes the fourth, but like that Fear is the Mind Killer shit is the bomb. Like I could just zone out on that for forever. Luminous, and then Shatter.
Oh, yeah.
I love Shatter because Module's soundtrack in that is so good. You know, she did that, and it's just it's a really good, you know, it's a breakout variant, you know, but the music's really awesome and I just get really drawn into it and it's fun. And it's, those are all sort of the, you know, that sort of just total zone out game for me. It's good to have those zone out games, right?
Yeah.
Totally.
I just want to beam off.
I can do that with WoW sometimes. I can go in and just grind a couple of levels.
Yeah. And MMO is good for that too. Like something like Guild Wars.
MMO can be a zone out game. I agree.
Especially
I
if you
that.
Got one of those trainer things going where you're,
yeah.
It's not a trainer. Sully it.
A min-maxer. Yeah,
even something like Guild Wars 2 or Marvel Heroes, you can just jump in for a couple minutes at a time and just completely.
I think it's actually called My First Paladin.
Shut your
This game's actually
face.
Playing itself.
Whoa. It is not.
You see someone in the official thread was like, Jeff, don't play it like that.
You're doing it wrong.
I'm having a blast. I'm having a blast returning to WoW. I played all week. I'm almost a 90.
I would say, you know, whatever stimulates the pleasure centers of your brain, do that, but you're doing it wrong.
It's amazing, too. It is remarkable, the progression in graphics to this new... Because I went back this week and started a Death Knight just to on a different server just to do some... I had to get some mounts that somebody gave me.
By the way, is when you know the addiction is. I just started up a new tune, you know, on another server, and
but playing that Wrath of the Lich King content, even just the Death Knight starting area, it is night and day, just pure visuals.
Pun intended.
Knight and day, it is. It's remarkable, and then you go into Pandaria, and it's lush and beautiful and amazing, and it really is the Disney of video games. Everything is really fun, a place to be in, alive and vibrant and colorful. And yes, of course, it's a bunch of pandas.
Come on,
but they did it really well.
Call it Pandaria.
It's
the Pandaria.
You don't mess with Pandaria. It's
God.
I ain't got no crystal ball.
Sorry about that.
The instances that I've done so far. The instances that I've done so far have been. So full of, I'm talking about a game full of whimsy. It is, you know, like you're going into a...
They had a pocket full of whimsy.
Yeah.
You're going to get some bamboo. Oh, by the way, a new panda was just born in Taiwan, I think, in captivity. And
sweet.
There's a video, which is like super rare and unheard of, in case you weren't aware. Anyway.
Sorry. Anyway, you go into like this this brewery and you're fighting. One of the guys is trying to create a brew, and every time he creates it, like spirits, he accidentally puts in the wrong ingredients and creates evil spirits.
Oopsie.
And you have to kill him. Yeah, he goes, he's like, yes, I got it. Yes, no, no, yes, yes, no, peppers. And then peppers fly out. It's hilarious. It's a fun experience. Everybody who plays WoW knows what
we don't doubt it's a fun experience.
I just had to talk. That's the only thing I've been playing.
I'm surprised. You know, maybe you should think about going back to Guild Wars 2 because maybe. They just published, you know, their
They're coming out with updates every 2 weeks.
They have been massively bumping some awesome updates, and they did their State of the Game thing
every
year.
It's a great game.
And it's massive.
It's a great game.
It doesn't sound like you're going to go back, though.
No. No plans, but I didn't have any plans to go back to WoW, and it just sort of happened, so you never know. It's just GTA is coming out. The date is approaching rapidly.
Oh, did you hear there's a Terra update that came out like about a week ago?
I did hear that, yeah. And I still have a very soft spot in my heart for that combat. Man, that combat is so fun. And the game is gorgeous.
Justin just needs a Call of Duty Ghost Squad to play all the games he wants. He's like, I do. Jump 1 to play Terra, jump 2 to play.
This is not a bad idea.
All right, everybody, hang out one more break. By the way, this is Jeff's music break, so.
Oh, well, okay. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, it's my buddy, my old buddy. He actually works at Ubisoft Montreal right now.
Oh, that's awesome.
I used to work for THQ, and we went to college together. And he has this band called White Cube that you're about to hear. It's a cube is spelled with a Q instead of a C. And I've seen them live, and they rock, house band, very fun, very cool audiovisual experience. So I hope you guys dig it. It's a new song.
It's time to rage.
Right,
a little intense, but you know, it's good.
It was definitely a little tense. I heard the wobble bass rocking in there, but it's very.
This is from a new. This is a new single that I think is coming out in September, but they had a preview.
Send us the information. We will get it up in the show.
It's a good guy.
Okay. Hey, you know, another thing we talked about last week was we had a great conversation about guides, which inspired some terrific conversation. And I loved pouring through everybody's conversation and points, and I think that we got a lot of good discussion going. This was the most interesting of what I read. It's from Cruel Legacy on guides and trailers and the likes as they regard to spoilers in general. Because Jeff, we sort of triggered we tripped a nerve with you on spoilers and trailers and got you a little upset.
Well,
so Cruel Legacy says that the more time goes by, the more I've come to realize that plot spoilers have zero effect on my enjoyment of a game, book, movie, or whatever.
That's not how I am.
Flies totally in the face of what you said. It goes on to say, storylines are usually so predictable, but if a story is well told, it will be equally enjoyable the 100th time you see it as it is the first time. Now, that's not to say that I don't appreciate surprises. There is a separation, though, between knowing I'm about to round a corner and see a giant mountain in front of me versus the experience of actually seeing that mountain the first time. This is a really interesting perspective. I sort of get where he's coming from. I don't know that, and I was wondering, like, I don't know how much I disagree with this, and I don't know how much I agree with it. There's a huge difference.
I definitely disagree with it.
You don't, but there's a huge difference.
Between what?
Between looking at think about it like as yourself. You're on your first trip to Colorado, and you know that, you know, whatever mountain is around the corner, you know, you're going to get there in 30 minutes. And that's all well and good. Maybe you've seen pictures of it or whatever before. But then when you actually get there and see it, that's your experience.
I think this totally depends on what the game is.
What the content is.
Mm-hmm. And if you're playing a shooter or you're playing something that's action-focused where story is sort of a, you know, justification for stringing one set piece to another, fine. That I agree. It doesn't really spoil. However, I'm playing something like, you know, The Witcher 2 or Skyrim or, you know, I don't want that stuff ruined for me. The whole reason or half the reason I'm playing the game is so I can figure out, you know, so I can role play and figure this stuff out on my own. And so it depends. I think it depends.
Both can be good.
Both can.
The experience of doing something, knowing what was in store. But nothing to me can match the unexpected. And rounding that corner and not even knowing there was going to be a mountain, seeing the mountain, and then taking in the mountain is unmatched, unparalleled for me. The idea of not knowing that I was going to get that power up. I got to the end of Rogue Legacy, for example, and the final power up, I'm not going to say what it is, but it blew me away. I didn't know it was coming. And if I had been watching videos and all this stuff of all the full skill tree every time. In fact, one of the big things that I loved about playing that game is that I didn't look at any guides or any strategy thing. I was trying to figure out how to beat the bosses and beating my head against the wall. But the exciting thing was every time I unlocked a skill, which is expensive and time consuming to get enough gold, I didn't know what other points on the skill tree might open up. And I would put money and time into things that I wasn't really excited about just because I thought that might branch part of my castle.
So you don't actually see what's coming down those.
No, you're building your castle as you go. And when you buy and you put money in certain skills, it'll like build a new wing under your castle or a new tower or whatever.
Ooh,
and
like
then
that.
Open up skills that you didn't know were going to come up. And some of those skills are so exciting that I would always put money in places that I didn't intend to because I wasn't planning ahead. I wasn't going, well, I want to get to this skill over here, but I have to put money over in these two to get to it. I was just exploring that side.
That's cool. That's really cool.
That's what I love. I love that stuff. And yes, that was not the most efficient way to do that. But
yeah, because that's the perfect counter argument to the guide, because the guide mentality would be, I want to go into this and know how to optimize my castle from the outset to get what I want to get.
I don't want to waste my time earning money to buy something I don't need.
Right.
But for me, that was what the fun was, because it could be amazing. And so I'm excited to keep playing and put money over here. And when it wasn't amazing, well, maybe something else will be amazing. It wasn't a big disappointment. It was just, let's see what happens, you know?
Mm-hmm. To kind of go back to what you were saying earlier, talking about Half-Life 2, would getting to the end of the game and finding the gravity gun, would that have been lessened if you had known about it before in a trailer or in a spoiler?
Abso-friggin-lutely. That's a great example. The blue gravity gun at the end of Half-Life 2, if I had known that was coming before I got to it, it would have completely changed that moment for me. It would still be ridiculously fun to use, but it would be less of a surprise and therefore, for me, less sweetened. And I think for what I'm after in life, the things that I get the most juice out of are those magical moments that you can't predict. Mm-hmm. And I try to insulate myself from that, from spoiling those things in life, in all manner of things. Now, and a lot of people were agreeing with James's, you know, guides to vacation spots thing, which I get. But for me, that's a very different thing, because it isn't like it is extraordinarily expensive and rare and time consuming to be able to get to go on a great vacation.
Normal person working in North America works 50 weeks out of the year and 2 weeks get on vacation.
Exactly. So of course you want to, if you're only going to get to go to Italy one time in your entire life, of course you're going to want to be able to see.
But I can make the same
X,
argument
y,
about games, is that, you know, if you're a working person and you work, you know, 40 plus hours a week and you have a regular life and you sleep and eat, then there's only so many hours a day to play games, and you're only going to play so many games.
But you have to realize that if you're doing that in an experience like a open world RPG, for example, you are changing the experience.
You are consciously changing the experience.
You are following a roadmap rather than role-playing. You know, and even if it's a roadmap that you want to follow because you want to end up at the end of the road.
And some people, when they go to Europe, want to be on a tour, and that's fine and good for them.
Right.
And they, you know, and you, if you're on that tour, you're only going to see where the tour goes, and it's going to be an in and out, and it's going to be like a certain guided thing. Or some people like to go the opposite end of the spectrum and just go and backpack.
But one of them is life. Anybody's, you know, if you want to use a game guide, you have every right to. You. I just find it sad. Personally,
oh no, I'm completely
to go back to what Legacy says.
Yeah.
I think it was just very interesting. I think I see both sides. I definitely enjoy the aha moment and the surprise and not having that spoil for me. I really do like that. And I think, though, at the same time, there's a nugget of truth there about a really good story still being a really good story the 100th time.
Yeah,
and
no, so I think that's really true, well, but it's a different
experience.
It's a reliving
and absorbing it and enjoying those memories.
Or contextualizing it in a new way and going, I'm a different person now, or having gone through and finding out where it ends up, now I can Now I can put that into perspective.
It's so different now when I watch When Harry Met Sally.
Right. Well, I mean, I've read the Game of Thrones books. Very few books I read multiple times. I mentioned last week, I think it was Ender's Game is one of them. And the Game of the Song of Ice and Fire books, I've read multiple times. And those
wow.
are in...
That's a commitment.
Well, yeah, they're just so damn good. I listened to them on audio. I mean, I read them first and then I listened to them on audio. And you get new things because the writing is so rich. That is a different kind of experience. But if the first time I had known some of the shit that happens, right. it would have stolen. Now, the second time, I know all the shit that happens, but it's a new type of experience.
Well, then you're looking for nuance. And you're
exactly.
Looking for,
you're going yeah. with
you're
a
looking
different
for things that you didn't pick up on in the first time.
Especially something that dense.
Yeah.
Especially
right.
something that dense.
Which is why The Big Lebowski is one of the best movies ever made, because every time you watch it,
it keeps giving.
It cannot. Giving. And that room really tied the road together. Anyway,
yeah.
Can't resist a Lebowski quote. Can't resist it. So, you know, I've been facing this dilemma now that I am well into The Witcher 2, which finally caught me.
Mm.
Finally caught me, because it's a very slow burn to get into The Witcher 2.
Prologue. I didn't find that to be the case.
Really?
Maybe it's because I didn't play the prologue when I first played it.
Well, no, not the tutorial.
Oh, yeah.
But the prologue. So before you get to Flotsam. Yeah, it is awesome. But you don't get the same level of player agency until you get to Flotsam, which is the first major city.
The first hub city.
Yeah, where you can walk around. And
so I would say actually still in Flotsam, I was not as engaged, because what happens is there's a big event at the beginning of the game, and suddenly you're really motivated if you're, you know, as the player Geralt, you're really motivated. There's some shit that's really gone down. You're like, man, I got to get on with this. I have things to do. And then you get to Flotsam, and those things to do sort of start taking back seats to all sorts of mundane crap. And I understand the balance. So
well, that's how you make your living, right?
That's the point. Why are you worried about making your living given the gravity of the situation you're in? But at the same time, I think they felt a very strong need to still let the player be a Witcher.
Witcher's got to eat, yo.
Witcher's got to eat.
Yeah. Sounds like in 3 it's going to be even more about hunting. You know, obviously it's called the Wild Hunt. But
Well, the Wild Hunt is something entirely different.
Right. But I mean, it sounds like you're going to be able to just go off and have open world track down that bad guy.
Oh, and there will be a meta narrative and, you know, some political intrigue, and I'm sure.
Can't wait for that game.
But yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, I just at some point, you know, I found myself wandering around the city, poking my nose in doors and houses, looking for things, and being sort of like, I'm on a very, very mundane plane now, and I have this really huge thing looming over my shoulder.
Yeah.
How about I get on with that?
I will say that the beginning of each chapter is filled with this. Okay, now it's time to amass all of the quest, like
knowledge.
Quests that I need to get.
And then once you get to the end of Flotsam, it's like you flip a switch and holy shit, it goes batshit insane with like really awesome stuff happening.
Yeah.
And the fun part of it was really seeing all the things that I had. So again, like you talked about before, when we made this the game of the year for Shack News a couple of years ago, everybody was head over heels with it. And so there was no way I was standing in the way of that argument. And one of the things that came up all the time was how many points of divergence there are in the story and what can happen based off what you decide to do. And it's really quite an unprecedented game that they've built because of the amount of content that they had to generate for each of these plot lines.
They do what
it's kind of unbelievable.
They do what BioWare promises to do and almost does in a lot of their games, but you know, especially the first Dragon Age and stuff, that was the closest comparison I could think of. Mm-hmm. But this is, you're right.
I mean,
this
it's
is
really
like totally
staggering. Without spoiling things, when you come into just the second chapter, a decision that you make has put you on one side or the other of a battle, and it's not a small thing. Where you are in the chapter geographically is determined by which side you chose. You're on either one side or the other,
right.
and you're either in you know, Vergen or someplace else,
right?
And it's ironic, you know, and it was completely without pre-planning. But you know, Ariel chose the other direction, and she's like, "Where the hell are you? What are you doing?" Like, oh, not exactly, but you know, like,
yeah, she chose.
Right, different. You have a completely different right. chapter.
It is a completely yeah. different chapter, a completely yeah. different experience. Yeah. I went with the Scoia'tael.
Yeah, no, me too.
So I went with the Scoia'tael. She went with Roach.
Really?
Yeah. Because I ain't being judgmental or nothing, but
because his hat, really? His hat is so awesome.
He does have a good hat.
Yeah.
He looks like a Shakespeare poet.
Yes.
I think there was some loyalty there for Roach having stood behind her. But the when they are on point with their storytelling and ramped up, and you are in those missions and things are happening and there's decisions that are being made and there are results that are very immediate, boy, they are freaking really good at it.
Yeah.
They are really, really good at it. And the story moves along a great clip. And so this is what, you know, what I wanted to talk about also some is that then when it comes back to the mundane time, it's really jarring. You know, it's like, am I really going to go out? And I think that in the second hub world of Vergen, that right. the missions that I'm going on are much better tied to the immediacy of what's going on, because, you know, for instance, there is situation one, and in order to fix situation one, there are, you know, subquests 1, 2, and right. 3 that I need to go do. So now it makes sense for me to go do subquests 1, 2, and 3.
But they always did a good job of giving you real tangible rewards for stuff,
yeah.
which is what really kept me pushed forward, because it wasn't like I was going to, you know, stumble, kill a dude and he was going to explode into a new shield and new right. hat for me. I wanted new swords or new something cool, I had to go and do it or make it or kill that giant thing that was going to drop the stuff that I could forge into.
Or you can just go out and look for that stuff. I mean, that's actually, you know, initially there's a wall of, you know, figuring out how the crafting system works and where you're going to find the pieces. And
which I also think slows down the opening act.
It really does.
Quite a bit.
It really does, because they throw it all open to you right at the beginning, and you sort of, especially if you're a dig-in gamer, you sort of like see the edges of it. And you're like, I want to get into this more. I want to figure out how I can make this studded leather armor or this studded superior pants or whatever.
But I loved how all the armor... I mean,
what I'm
people say
right
this
now,
about...
By the way. Studded superior pants.
That's why you're acting so superior. what people compliment Monster Hunter with as well is that I could tell the creature that I defeated based on what I was wearing.
But it's
really
cool.
I love that.
Well, especially when you're and then of course adding the trophy that you're wearing on your waist.
The trophy is so cool, awesome. Right? Like, why aren't more games ripping that off? That is so cool. It's just like this little hanging.
Did you guys, I mean, I know it's cinematic, but did you guys see the Witcher 3 cinematic trailer?
Yeah, they played that at E3, didn't it? It's the same one they
played. There's a new one that came out last week that's supposed to be really good. I haven't watched it, but it's supposed to be really amazing.
It is. I dare you not to squeal when you watch that thing. It's so good. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's why I love this game. Mm-hmm. Or that's why I love this series. And, like, it's, yeah, watch it. I think it's Killing Monsters is the name of it.
Mm-hmm. It's not that actually, long. That is the name of it. It's Killing Monsters.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's good.
I'm really thrilled with it. And I'm really enjoying the gravity of these decisions. And at the same time, it's funny because knowing that the decisions change things so dramatically, I haven't been doing guides or anything for that, because I'm really enjoying the nature of making these decisions. And I think one of the things that they've been good at is every time you make a decision, you get a good idea of them. They really have succeeded, to my mind, of that there's not a right or a wrong answer here. They're gray. And even when you take a decision, that if you feel a little wrong about the decision, then there are places down the way where you might alter the course of things a little bit. Like, do you save somebody or do you go and kill somebody?
Yeah.
I mean, the situations come up like, well, you might be able to, you can't do both of them, but you could go save some people who are in one situation, or you could go and kill somebody who did something that's really horrible, but because of the way things are working and time pressures, you can't do both of them.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's a very interesting decision. It's like, well, so am I feeling more humanitarian now, or am I more vindictive?
And that's what CD Projekt Red has excelled at, is those gray, living in the gray area. Like, they give you choice, but it's not like good and evil. It's like, okay, here are two choices.
It's so much more interesting.
They might both be evil.
And there's so few games that do that. I mean, I think Fallout did that a little bit. Dragon's Age certainly excels at that, which is...
Dragon Age 1 was really good. I never played the 2. Two or three.
I finished both of them, and I enjoyed both. I think 1 is better. Game and a better story and better
one
gray
really
areas,
fun.
But 2 is awesome as well. I really enjoyed it.
I feel like The Walking Dead does that really well, too.
I mean, that's its bread and butter.
Right.
I mean, that's what it trades on. It trades on that.
And it doesn't necessarily depend on decisions that are either good or bad, per se. You can just depend on, you know, what's better for the situation, and or even just don't say anything at all. Just completely.
I am now very curious about the combat mod patch.
Yeah.
I would definitely recommend giving it a shot. It's something you can install and then disable again if you don't want. Because
would it corrupt a save that I have already?
I wouldn't try to use it with this. I haven't tried to use it with a save, but because it basically changes quest structure and how rewards are doled out and abilities are
I'm enjoying the way it was built. The combat, the people are truthful in the assessment of the overpowering of the role.
Yeah, you'll be diving a lot.
You want to check it out though, because it will give you a pretty good indication as to where they're going.
But if I keep my finger off of that dive button and make myself fight, the system is very fun, and
it's still fun with the dive button.
The skill trees, I actually made a conscious decision at about level 7 that I wasn't going to min-max. That one of the cool things about The Witcher was that they has this capability to do all these different things.
Right.
And so I don't know if I'll have enough to get to the ultimate end of each of those trees.
You won't.
But that's fine. Yeah. I mean, I made this sort of conscious decision that I'm not going to go to the end of these trees. You know what? Instead, I'm going to be able to reap benefits from each of these trees and play the game as a witcher. Play the game as someone who has sword skills.
But dude,
magic skills.
Being able to finish three people at once, dude, is so badass. Yeah. And the fact that they have like animations built in for triple finishers and stuff like that, I was so glad that I got to the end of some of those.
Did you go sword or did you go magic?
I went a little of both, but
that's what I've been doing. But I bet I won't be able to do all of one of them.
I mean, I didn't do any. I really didn't do any like gathering skills.
You didn't do the alchemy stuff.
And all of the trap making and stuff. I mean, I made some traps, but I didn't put skill points into it because I really wanted to get to those late finishers, and I like throwing fire in people's faces.
Yeah, the alchemy points and stuff aren't nearly as important unless you're playing on hard or above, because they're more like, here's something that'll give you a boost with these guys.
And there is a whole other way to play the combat system of this game. It's quite interesting, where you can play it much like a classic Dungeons & Dragons ranger would. I mean, the way the ranger class was originally envisioned in D&D of, you know, setting traps. So running around the battlefield, and as you're facing off against someone who you're a little faster than, getting a little bit of ways from them, setting a trap, and then luring them over into the trap, and then finishing them off while they're stuck in the trap or putting other effects on them. So a lot of versatility in the game. It's
a fantastic game.
It is a really good game.
And it makes me so excited for the third one.
Yeah, you're like, tweet for the... You got a ways to wait.
A little bit.
You got a ways.
It's going to be good.
It's going to be really good.
What should we do next?
I played a little Splinter Cell Blacklist.
Really?
Co-op. Yeah, just the co-op campaign and some of the co-op
Horde
mode.
Oh, you did?
No,
Mercs
I didn't
Spies.
Get to. No, this was co-op. So it was like a 5-mission co-op campaign. I played with Zav, actually.
Oh, that's cool.
So he was reviewing.
What platform?
It was PS3 debug. So,
oh, rad.
So it wasn't complete. But the co-op story mode stuff is a lot of fun. I mean, it's not tons and tons and tons of content, but it's a good, feels like Splinter Cell. You know, it's the maps are significantly big. There's definitely, you have to do, you know, use stealth and stuff. It's not like you can just go through and kill everyone. So it is a little bit more tactical than your average shooter. The Horde mode, though, that they have, and I can't remember what it's called, is not so good.
It seems odd that you would have
that's
Horde.
That's a weird game to put a Horde mode
it's,
in.
It's, and that's why. Because
out of touch.
And apparently, like Zav was telling me, you know,
when
you play through the single-player campaign, you're upgrading your gadgets and stuff. If you're playing stealthily, you get better bonuses in stealth, and you become, like, the ultimate stealth badass. If you're killing people, you get better, like, killing people stuff. And when it gets to the Horde mode, all this stuff is persistent. So you come over, and if you're like Zav had built all his dude up as like a major stealth aficionado, and then you're in a Horde mode and you're like, okay, stealth isn't really working here that well. Like half these gadgets that I unlock just don't foot the bill, you know? And it's not that it doesn't really matter, because it's really just, it's sort of perplexing to me why they put that mode in the game. I guess because they could, and it was maybe
because there are people who like to play the game that way. So I mean, it's probably different strokes for different folks. Keep in mind, this is a game, and I'm sure this was part of, you know, the scope when they were imagining it. This is a game that 2 years ago was an E3 hero. You know, this was a big time, high profile, major release, and then somewhere along the lines got sort of, you know,
marginalized.
Yeah. And I don't know. I never completely. I mean, I think there was some lack of faith in the core game. Obviously, maybe it wasn't where they wanted it to, and maybe that spurred the studio on, because now by all indications, it's really going to hit well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, of course, it had things like that. So I think, Jeff, maybe the answer is, you know, when this was a superhero game and it was a big time, you know, E3 thing, it's like, hey, we've got to put in here something so the person who isn't into the stealth will also have something.
Well, and to its credit, it has like four or five different multiplayer modes between co-op and spies and mercs.
I mean, the spies and mercs thing, I mean, I've sure I've told this story before, but you know, Dan Hsu, when he was EIC at EGM, loved that game so very much.
It was great. And
yeah, it's, if you haven't ever played it, it's a 2-on-2, and you have the spies who are obviously wetworks guys with, you know, gadgets and lightly armored and lightly equipped, but they have, you know, the ability to sneak around and they'll have an objective. And then you've got the merc, and the merc is exactly what you expect. It's a guy with an AK-47 and a flashlight.
Right, right.
And he's looking for the mercs.
In first person.
Yeah, in first person.
So
you got one in third person, one in first person. It's a really cool, it's especially crazy because it's another one of those generate stories games. It's one of those ones where it's like, you know, especially if you're as a merc, you're like, do you hear that? Do you hear that? Or you're, especially if you split up, suddenly you hear gunfire and you go running to it, or vice versa. If you're playing the spy, it's like, oh shit, they're gonna find us. And then they spot you, and gunfire is on, and lights are up, and
So while I didn't play that mode, but from all indications, that is back in full force too. Like, you know, spies and mercs is like,
they were going for the super classic approach. Going to the super classic.
But yeah, I had a lot of fun with it. I can't wait to play the single player. But yeah, multiplayer, if you're looking for a good co-op, it's like four hours to get through like five missions or something like that. So yeah, it's a nice little extra flavor.
And Ozzy, I understand you were being miserly with your gold.
yes, I was. I think that's the segue into DuckTales Remastered. And I've been looking forward to this ever since it was announced. Like, DuckTales was one of my favorite games as a kid, and there are a few things.
So it didn't destroy your childhood?
No, I'm not going to say. Other than the theme song being on a loop over at E3, I didn't have too many negative things to say about it, but I won't say that it's the exact same game either. Like, there are certain things that have changed, some for the better, some for the worse. First of all, the upgrades that they've given the art style and the music are just absolutely wonderful. Just completely fit the old atmosphere of the old show. And
for people who don't know the game, because it is a retro return, give a quick description of what it's all about.
Basically, a platformer. You're just linear platformer. You're collecting as much gold as you can. You're fighting a couple of bosses, and at the end, you're trying to find a giant treasure. So it's about as simple as NES games get, and they pretty much retain that entire spirit. But there are certain levels in Remastered where you have to kind of collect certain items. Like, you're in the Amazon, you have to collect 10 coins before you can get to the end of the level. In the Himalayas, you have to collect the engine parts to launch Pad's plane. And that doesn't lend to speedruns the way that the old game did. The old game, if you knew exactly where to go, you could finish the entire game in about 10 minutes. So that you can't.
So do you miss that? Do you like the speedrun thing?
I thought it was a pretty neat idea. Okay. And so
I think that's fair in retro gaming. I mean, that's obviously that's clearly a retro gaming thing.
Right. But with all the additions that they've made to it, even as minor as the tutorial level or like an entirely different sequence in the Himalayas where you're actually fighting Beagle Boys on top of Launchpad's plane, there are new ideas to the game that make it really cool. And one of the things I was comparing it to was, compare it to, like, I don't want to call it soulless, but compare it to like the remake that Ubisoft released a few years ago for Turtles in Time. Like, they
didn't, great perfect comparison.
They didn't add anything to the game. They just pretty much upped the graphics and said, here's the game. And if anything, it felt diminished because it just took away from the spirit of the old game. And this is not the case in Remastered. DuckTales Remastered feels like it stands on its own. It feels like a perfect homage to the old school game. And I'm really enjoying it. I've only gotten a couple of hours in because I honestly have a lot of work I need to be doing.
We've been keeping you busy.
Yes, you guys have. I appreciate that. But from the little I played of it, I'm about halfway through. I really love it. It's everything I could have wanted.
Cool. All right, we're going to wrap up with everything you ever wanted in our finishing moves.
Finishing moves.
All right, a lot of questions pouring in about Weekend Confirmed Fantasy Football League, and it's all on my back, folks. I have not created the league. I need to take care of that. Jeff Cannata is in.
Boom.
Andrew Renee is in.
Boom.
I'm sure the other folks in. I have to figure out. You know, last year we had two leagues. I need to figure out how to split it up. I need to figure out how to manage my time also, because I am in a number of leagues and I'm a little overloaded. I will commit to you that I will get something created. I mean, it's more fun if Jeff and I, at least, are playing in the same league with you guys, but then there's only, like, so many spots underneath that, and I want to be fair to everybody for chances to get in, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I'll at least set a league up, and maybe we'll see. Well, I'll set a league up, and we'll see how it goes. I'll probably do it. Jeff, are you playing any other fantasy games this year?
No.
Although we did NFL.com last year, and I really enjoyed it, most of my other leagues are on one of two spots. One of them is Pay and the other one's Yahoo. So
yeah, Yahoo's easy.
I might just put it on Yahoo and make it easy. So unless there's any great objection to that, that would give me all my leagues in one spot, which makes it easier for me to manage those leagues. So I will get it together. Stay tuned. I think it's going to be 12-team, half-point PPR, one quarterback. I don't know what the deal is with these dual quarterback leagues. This year, this is the year of people
like big points.
Dual quarterbacks.
They're like big points.
Dual quarterbacks.
I guess because there are so many quarterbacks, so many good quarterbacks in the league this
year. That's true. There are a lot of good quarterbacks.
It creates a lot of weird. Two quarterbacks is just strange to me. Yeah. We will be one quarterback, two running backs, wide receiver, tight end, and a flex.
That's like a 50 cent back. You know what I'm saying?
All right. You just brought this on yourself, young man. You are next.
All right, so my finishing move is about a cool little indie iOS racer that I've been playing called Delta V, or it might be Delta 5, but it's Delta V Racing.
Cool.
And it is a little side-scroller, so it's a 2D plane, and the controls are really simple. It's you basically drag your finger up and down to move your little ship, and there's a bunch of power-ups, and sometimes you're racing, it's a time trial, sometimes it's against other racers, and it's very much sort of like you can basically find the perfect run through the map or the perfect time if you do.
Oh, that's sort of old school.
If you do everything perfectly, you can get through it and achieve the best score. But yeah, it's really fun.
Free to play or 99 center?
You know, I don't know the price tag. I don't think it's free to play.
Okay.
I think it might be a buck, but don't quote me on the price. Oh, it's also on Android too.
Delta V Racing.
Yes.
Jeff Cannata.
I did play something other than WoW this week, and it is a spiritual successor / remake successory kind of dealio.
Successory?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's really what they want to call it. Of my favorite game series of all time, my favorite game of all time was, and always will be, Ultima 7.
Oh, yes.
And Mythic made a remake, kind of modernization, of Ultima 4. Ultima 4, The Quest of the Avatar, really, you know, talking about all these games like The Witcher 2, which have shades of gray and moral decisions, the granddaddy of them all, the one that did it first, better, and still best, I would argue.
Ultima OG.
Ultima 4. It was a game, it was called The Quest of Virtue, and it really was about moral decisions. It was about becoming the avatar. And how do you become the avatar? Well, you embrace certain virtues, compassion, honor, valor, spirituality, all these things. And how do you do that? Well, you do that by wrestling with very difficult questions, shades of gray, and doing various quests that really were less about killing big monsters and more about, you know, searching your soul.
Is it also not the first series where you could bake bread in a game?
I believe so. And that was a big, big fucking deal back in the day, man.
It totally was. It was like, dude, the recipe.
You could reap your own wheat, take it to the mill, mill it down, bake it.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, amazing. anyway, so this iOS game, Mythic, EA, big, gigantic, enormous gigabyte download, free-to-play iPad game. And it is gorgeous. It is all hand painted. Absolutely stunningly beautiful game.
By the way, it's called Ultima Forever.
Yeah, and they supposedly want to do Ultima 5 ever, Ultima 6 ever.
Oh,
and then
it's Ultima 4 ever.
Exactly.
It's not like the come get some.
No.
Forever.
No.
No.
I'm just starting it. It's supposedly huge, but it already has those flavors of make tough decisions. There's no right answer to any of this. And they come out right out and say that at the beginning of the game. There's no right answer to any of this stuff. You create your character in the way that the Ultima games are famous for, talking to the gypsy, making, she tells you stories and you have to pick what would you do here or there, and there's no right answer. And even all, most of the quests I've encountered so far are, you know, guy is dying and he's really thirsty.
And he needs some bread.
He's been
baking really bread. Needs some bread.
He's been attacked by a spider. Do you go kill the spider to avenge him? Do you help him drink his last drink to quench his thirst? Or do you kill him as a mercy killing? It's like all these very tough decisions. Awesome. Unfortunately, it's an iPad game, which I think the game would be much stronger if it was actually controller based on a, you know, PC or console. The controls actually work okay on the iPad. I just don't really want to be playing this kind of deep, engrossing, awesome experience by tapping around on a screen.
I think Mythic was saying that if it does well enough, they'll bring it to PC at some point.
I hope so. It's clearly made with a lot of love and a lot of care. They danced around some of the copyright issues. For example, it's Lady British instead of Lord British, because they didn't get rights to Lord British because Richard Garriott still owns that name.
Although it's interesting because they actually went to Richard Garriott for input, is what they were telling me at E3.
So. Interesting.
Yeah, and they said, don't use Lord British.
And it's got, you can use it. The check has 5 or 6 zeros on the end of it.
Yeah, it's got a lot of really interesting modernizations too. There's free to play hooks. There's multiplayer, always online thing. In fact, one of the bummers is that it is always on, like literally if I'm in my bedroom, laying in bed with my iPad, which has only spotty Wi-Fi coverage in my apartment, if I lose connection, I can't play, which is a bummer. Anyway. Super excited because it is my favorite series of all time. So I recommend people checking it out. And it's free. It's just a gigantic download.
The best price.
Oz, you get to bring us home.
Well, I came in talking about Call of Duty, and I'm going to go out talking about an indie game. Gone Home came out on Thursday. Ew. And it is the game from the Fulbright Company, which are the people behind Bioshock 2's Minerva's Den DLC. And this is one of those cases where I've been watching the trailers. I've been keeping up with all this stuff. And it lends to an impression of a certain type of game. And then I actually sat down to play it for review, and it's a completely different game than I was expecting. Like, it's still the same, like, point-and-click mechanics, that type of thing, but the story that it tells is probably one of the best stories I've encountered in a game in a very long time.
It's only story, right? That's the whole point of the game.
Exactly. And the way they go about telling that story, the way you go about exploring you're basically coming back from studying abroad for a couple of years, and you go back to your house in the middle of a thunderstorm. There's nobody home. So you're basically just exploring the house, the quote-unquote psycho house, which is, you know, has a history behind it. And the more you start to piece together what your parents have been up to, what your sister's been up to. And without spoiling anything, the ultimate resolution of that story is probably some of the most heartwarming stuff I've seen in a video game in a very long time. It's absolutely worth playing. It's only about a couple of hours, so it won't set you back in terms of time too much, and I would fully recommend it. It actually got, I think it's our first 9 on Shaq News since we started adding scores to our reviews. So, I mean, we might have retroactively had some 9s, but this is the first fresh 9 that we've had.
And fresh 9.
The freshest 9 you will come across.
And I fully back that up. It is a wonderful game. I fully recommend it.
I hope when I log onto that URL, it goes, fresh 9.
That would be really awesome.
Good stuff, Oz. Good stuff. All right, everybody. Thanks very much. We will be back again next week, of course, with another fresh show. Mm-hmm. All kinds of stuff getting ready to come out. It'll be the freshest. I'm actually relatively, I shudder to say this. I'm tempted to try out Papers, Please. It seems like
this. Do it.
It's the strangest. Doesn't look like it would be necessarily quote unquote fun, but somehow.
But I keep hearing it's addicting as hell.
There's something oddly satisfying about it.
That's exactly sort of how it struck me. I'm like, there's going to be something weird about this. Anyway, we'll be back next week with a great show. Until then, thanks everybody for joining us. That's your Weekend Confirmed, and we are Ghost. Get real. We're taking it over, baby. Shake it out. They said I never made it, they called me Zip Zero. But now I'm a lieutenant in this hip-hop bureau. There was a time when I was riding the line, but then they called my number and I'm ready to shine. I sit back, relax, ready to go. Put a little swagger with my sick-ass flow. Now I rock the stages and I do it with ease. For blowing up from promoters overseas. Fly me out, put me up in the condo. No complaints when I'm done with my show. I'm grateful for every single one of y'all. Without you This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.